The Augustin Hosinga Show with your host Augustin Hosinga.
Smack the shit out your bitch ass midget girlfriend, nigga. Hello there, welcome back to the Augustin Hosinga Show with I, your host, Augustin Hosinga, and this is episode number 765. That is Siete Seis Cinco with I, your friend, the friend you wish you never had, your pal, your compadre, your homeboy, your homegirl, Augustin Hosinga. What's going on? What's crackalacking? How are you doing today, my family and friends? Great, you feel amazing, don't you? I know you feel amazing. I know you are amazing. I can just feel it through my screen. I can feel it through my headphones. I can feel it through my microphones. I can feel it even through the soles of my feet as I place my bare, naked, black African feet on this carpet I'm sitting on in my lovely basement apartment underneath my mum, covered in Cheeto dust, wanking away like an absolute savage. I appreciate every single one of you. So, why am I in such a good mood, you're asking? Augustina, why are you such a good mood? Why do you sound so perky? Why are you like really, 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 really on turn up mode? You want to know why I'm on turn up mode? Bitch, you guessed it. Arsenal are out of the flipping Champions League. And on the same flipping day, Man City are out of the Champions League. Both English representatives, both fierce rivals of United are out of the Champions League. Arsenal, in fucking real time. Man City in extra time on penalties even, which makes it even sweeter, right? Because they dangled the hope above Man City. They gave them the idea that, hey, you guys might be able to do the treble two seasons in a row. Because let's be honest, if Man City were able to do the treble two seasons in a row, we might have to have some very uncomfortable conversations about who really is the GOAT. And maybe Sir Alex Ferguson's, you know, status as one of the greatest or the greatest Premier League manager of all time might come into disrepute if Man City and Pep Guardiola were able to do a treble two times in a row. But bitch, guess what? It doesn't matter now because it's never going to happen. It's never going to happen. Most likely, we're ending towards the end of Pep Guardiola's tenure at Man City anyway. I can see him retiring. I can see him taking a sabbatical. I can see him doing what Klopp is doing, going away, resting, recharging, and going to another team. Because performing at that level, you know, being able to reinvent teams at that kind of level, at that level of fucking intensity, bloody blah, 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 season in, season out, is not easy. But for teams like myself, the ones that I support, Man United, we're in disarray. We're in absolute disarray. And the only thing that brings us any kind of hope, because let's be honest, Man United fans, there's no way back for us anytime soon unless full ownership is done, right? Unless we have a full sale, there's absolutely no hope that we're ever going to come back. None. Zero hope. So if that's the case, the only thing we have is celebrating, you know, games against our rivals when we win, games against our local rivals when we win, derbies, right? And games where we don't play, but our rivals play and they lose. So celebrating our rivals' misery, we celebrate, that's what we get out of it. And maybe along the way, it's the odd derby game we win and your bitter rival game that we win. Apart from that, we're basically doomed. We have a pattern we've already seen here. 11 years of greater ownership, post-Alex Ferguson, we've done absolutely nothing. So, if that's the case, I would wager the bet we're probably going to be in for 10 more years of hurt. Will the Glazers ever leave? Probably not. So if they don't leave and we're doomed to have them until the end of time, or if the Enios take over, who look to be as inept as flipping the Glazers, we're flipped for a long time. If that's the case, I'm going to be more than happy to celebrate the misery of my most bitter rivals. Because guess what? I absolutely hate it. I hate seeing my bitter rivals do well. I'm not one of these like Team GB type of people. Oh, I want to see a Premier League team in the semi-final. I don't care about any other Premier League side apart from the team that I support. The only other teams I support outside, in England, are outside the Premier League. Champions League, you know, Championship teams, League One teams, League Two teams. Yeah, I want to see them do well in the FA Cup. I want to see them do well in general. But any other team in the league, I don't care about. Really don't care. So whatever they do in Europe, as long as it fails, I'm all for it. Whatever they do in the Cups and they fail, I'm all for it. League title run, I'm all for it. Actually, that being said, Arsenal just crumbled. They just blew the title chances, right, by losing at Aston Villa, or losing at home to Aston Villa. Now they just blew the Champions League. So two back-to-back L's. Arsenal in April, always a flipping dodgy month for them, isn't it? Whenever April comes around, which is usually the business end of a season, right, you get into the real crunch times, or the real kind of, you know, harrowing places when it comes to semi-finals of particular competitions, knockout rounds, that's when they start to crumble, when the pressure's really on. Because, you know, don't get me wrong, it's not easy what they're trying to do. You're trying to basically outperform Man City and Liverpool every single week, and they're playing at an extremely high level. But still, when the pressure's really on, Arsenal always crumble. You can always count on that. Always count on them flipping crumbling. And again, I didn't watch the Arsenal-Bayern Munich game. I mostly watched Real Madrid versus Man City. But from what I've led to believe, Arsenal didn't play really well. A lot of players didn't really, you know, turn up. Which again, no surprise, as you can see via the possessions, right? Bayern Munich had 15 shots, Arsenal had 8, 3 on target for both. Bayern Munich had most of possession at home, makes probably a lot of sense. Passes were quite balanced, 479 to 455. Pass accuracy was quite balanced as well. And maybe the fouls were quite even as well. But overall, maybe Bayern Munich had more chances on Arsenal's goal, albeit most of them were wide and shit. But according to what I've been hearing on Twitter spaces, Arsenal didn't play too well. The Man City Real Madrid game was probably the best in that it's our local rivals, and they had the slight bit of hope was given to them when Kevin De Bruyne managed to flip and score a goal to make it level. And then, of course, they thought they were going to probably win it, but in the end, Real Madrid took the penalties. To be fair, when I was watching this game, I had a feeling that if it did go to penalties, Real Madrid would probably end up winning. They just have the knack. And look at the statistics here. Man City had 33 shots to Real Madrid's 8. Real Madrid only had 3 shots on target, one of which being a goal, and that was it. Possession, 68 to 32. Passes, 919 Man City to Real Madrid's 457. And this is Man City too. They don't just hold the ball for nothing. They don't just pass the ball around the back. Man City are, they do keep possession, but they keep it for an actual attacking purpose, for a controlling purpose. 92% pass accuracy for Man City to 81 Real Madrid's. God damn it, bro. Look at the corners. 18 to 1. God damn it. Man City, total domination, really, apart from actually scoring the goals. But then Real Madrid still end up winning on penalties. You love to see it. You love to see it. No more fucking three-peat 2 times in a row. That's not happening. You love to flipping see it. So that's why I'm in a good mood. That's why I'm in a bloody good mood. Today's been an odd one, right? Or the last couple of days have been an odd one. Because I think it's been a constant reminder for me. Another reminder if ever I needed it. I don't really need this type of reminder. I should be a little bit more grown to realize this stuff anyway. But regardless, this is a reminder to me and a reminder to you guys out there, especially my cisgendered male types over there, right? Or out there in the space, whoever's listening to me. Mind your business. Mind your business until somebody asks you to be in their business, right? Yeah. Mind your business until somebody asks you to be in their business, basically. And why do I say that? So the other day, I went out, you know, doing my little life admin, adult admin type of stuff, popped into the shops, and I happened to see this young lady walk by the shop door, right? Because the shop door off licenses are usually right next to the pavement and shit. I'm standing there right next to the till buying something, and usually whenever I'm waiting for the person to give me my change or get the stuff that I need, whether it's a Magnum or something, I'm just standing on the door having a look around, you know, doing the whole hood boy ends guy thing, you know, standing on the doorway, you know, doing a little fist with my hand, punching it in my hand, feeling like a bad boy. You know how it is, isn't it? Standard thing. So I'm there standing on the door, and this lady walks by me, right? She walks by me, and the first thing I quickly notice is she walks by me, and she's wearing this dress. And as she walks by me, and I turn to my right-hand side to look at her as she's walking by, I see that her entire, like, left arse cheek, a very wide, a very voluptuous, a very round, very jiggly white left bum cheek, not white, well, black lady bum cheek, is, like, just jiggling as she's walking by, and I'm like, oh, shit. But I don't think she's realised, because as she's walking by, I see that she's got, like, I kind of like doing this as well, like where sometimes you put a tote bag, if it's got long straps, you kind of put it across your body. You know, sometimes I don't like wearing my tote bag like a Caucasian person, right? You know, there's like Caucasian hipsters with like the handlebar mustache and they roll their own cigarettes and they like rolling up their trousers and they wear white socks, right? Those type of Caucasians like to carry a tote bag like a handbag, like, and they put their hand on it like, my tote bag. When I'm wearing the tote bag, I wear it like a dude, right? So I cross body it, right? Or I just fucking tie it on the belt loop or something. So it's like a weird satchel thing. It's a weird like bag thing hanging on my flipping belt loop, right? Or I just, or I wrap the straps around my hand and I carry it like it's a flipping gun. Do you know what I mean? It's weirdness. But anyway, sometimes if the straps are really long, I'll kind of cross body it like a messenger bag. This woman did the same thing, but because she was wearing a dress and she was carrying a backpack, she had the double, right? When you go into, it's like the airport swag. You've got like your backpack, that's your carry-on, and you've got your bag that's got all your like toiletries in it, maybe a little sandwich, you know, blah, blah, blah. So she's walking, and I guess as she was walking, her dress was was rising up because her dress was kind of going in between her backpack and like the tote bag. But I don't think she even noticed because it was just one cheek that was out. So I saw it and I instantly, and again, usually I'm very good at just like minding my business and just be like, you know what, whatever, innit? But for some reason, something came over to me to say, hey, like to the lady, madame or something like that. I think I said something like that. Hey, madame, to kind of get her attention so that she knew, because she wasn't that far away from me. Just so I can give her like a little like, you know, hey, black person to black person, by the way, you know, your whole ass is out, by the way. But when I said it, I really regretted it because I was like, hold on, this is going to sound like I'm trying to holler. But I'm not trying to holler, right? I'm just trying to say, like, literally, I wasn't even going in the direction. I just stood where I was standing. And I said, hey, by the way, madame, or something like that. And she turned around with, like, a look of disgust. And then as she turned around, look of disgust, she started lowering her dress straight away. And, like, as if, like, to cover herself up. Like, oh, my God, I'm so embarrassed. Somebody saw me lay naked or something. Or, like, you know, by mistake, I walked into like a woman's dressing room or something. She had that kind of like frightening look at her. She was kind of pulling down her dress. And I was like, and it immediately made me feel terrible. I immediately felt like a creepo. And I was like, hold on, I'm doing you a favor, kinda, by alerting you to the fact that your dress is rising up and your literal whole left arse cheek is out, right? I'm kind of alerting you to the fact that your whole arse cheek is out and you're probably walking from Stratford to the station. Why are you making me now feel like the creep? And I was like, oh, you know what's happened? Like, maybe she knew. Maybe she was aware that her dress was up, but she was pacing like she was going to a, you know, like she had that kind of run. She had that kind of walk and gait to her, like she was in a rush to go to a train or something, right? Because where I live, the train station's not too far. So, you know, usually it's like a, you know, you can tell people are like in a rush. And I was like, oh, maybe she was aware of it. And she didn't care because it was a particular time of day where there wasn't many people about anyway. And she probably would have been able to get from her, where she was, where we were, to her destination without many people seeing her dress up. So maybe I'm the one that made it bait, you know? Like, maybe it wasn't actually bait, but because I said it, it made it worse. You know what I mean? And I was like, in that moment, I was like, oh, now I feel like a fucking idiot. Because now, not only does it look like I was trying to holler and she ignored me, now it looks like I was like trying to holler because her dress was up or something. And I made her feel like uncomfortable. I was doing like a Chris D'Elia, Brian Callen, you know, Russell Brand type of thing. Oh, you know, what's going on? Where's my hug? Like, nah, which is why I'd never fucking do that anyway. But it's like, I've quickly realized in that moment, shit, that's why you should mind your business. That's why they say stay out of women's business, because there's no doubt in my head that she did not know that it was dresses up. I'm sure she did. 99% of me now is thinking she must have known it was up, but she didn't care in that instance because she was in a rush to go somewhere. And she knew at that time of day, not many people would be around, or most people wouldn't probably say nothing to her because she's a black woman. Or I don't know, whatever, right? But me, the idiot, me trying to get myself involved, me the fucking, I don't know what you call it, me trying to be a fucking good Samaritan, right? What am I trying to be, the bum cheek Samaritan or something? I wanted to alert her, like, excuse me, miss, do you know that one of your, it's like, yes, I know, you fucking donut, stop looking and go away. Like, oh, I felt so dumb. And in that moment, I thought to myself, you know what, this is why as a guy you have to mind your business. You really have to mind your business. And even the most genuine, lacking in creepiness gesture can land you in trouble. and not in trouble because of how she reacted, which was obviously to me bad, because she like gave me that kind of like, yuck kind of face, like I'm a creep, and she pulled down her dress like I walked into her fucking bedroom while she was changing. The worst thing about it is the feeling you get after, your own internal feeling, where you start to feel like a monster. You're like, what did I do? Like, why did I do that? I shouldn't have done that. I should have just kept my mouth shut. Now I feel embarrassed. Now I feel like an idiot. That feeling in your gut, that same feeling that you get when you get into an argument with somebody in the street. You get into an argument with somebody and then you don't say the thing you want to say. Then on the way home, you're like thinking, I should have said this. I should have said that. Then he would have said this. Then I would have punched him in the face. Then he would have punched me back. Then I would have fucking, you know, pushed him into the train tracks and watched his whole body split into when the fucking Lizzie line went over him. Right? You've got all these things in your head that you want to do, but then when it happens, it doesn't go the way you want it to go to. And then you start to regret it on the way home. And I had the same feeling in that instant. I was like, you know what? I regret so much opening my big black mouth and saying anything to this lady, because she 100% knew Wagwan. But in my infinite wisdom, I thought I was being the, no, she doesn't know. She mustn't. I have to tell her. Like, I was like some weird bum, you know, bum cheek white knight. Like, she doesn't need my help. You know what I mean? I'm sure most women are aware when their boob is out, when they're showing too much shoulder, when they're showing too much, like they just know, you know, intimately where their body is and what they're showing and shit. And I don't need to bring attention to it. So I probably was in the wrong in that regard. But for me, the lesson was, mind your fucking business. And it's sad because in some situations, you should step up and speak up. But I think those situations, you know, I think this particular one, you know, there was no need for me to say anything, really. I was kind of just trying to get myself involved. I was probably, what's that word called? It was probably self-serving, my gesture. I wanted to appear to be the good guy. Maybe deep down, that was what was going on. Maybe I wanted to be the hero. I was like, yeah, let me save this damsel in distress who has her skirt up and say, hey, by the way, your skirt is up. You should put it down before anyone sees it. And she'd be like, oh my God, thank you. You're such a hero. More men should be like you. Like, do you know what I mean? Maybe that was instinctively what I was trying to do. And maybe my karma was getting that weird, like, creepo look, and then she kind of pulled her dress down and ran away. Like, that kind of yuck, that kind of ick that I gave her, that kind of fright, maybe was my karma, because I tried to be a hero. I tried to be a hero, as Brendan would say, and it came back and slapped me in the face. So no problem, right? All good. Sometimes you take it else. But now I understand, having watched this video, I now understand why some women are so cautious around some dudes, and in general, why some women should probably never give guys, even guys who you think might be cool, benefit of the doubt. We are all strangers and we're all monsters to them. In actuality, we're all strangers, we're all monsters. Do you want to know why? Look at this fucking video. And in case you're listening to this, it's a video of a guy in what looks like to be a Target. He's got his phone out. And there's a woman in front of him bending down, looking at, I don't know, I think she's looking at gift bags or cards or something. He goes behind her and he starts to record her up her skirt. He starts to place his phone under her skirt and starts recording her. So maybe that woman who walked by me with her bum out and gave me a dirty look, maybe the fact that she did that was because most dudes out there are like this. So she couldn't give me the benefit of that because she doesn't know me. She probably would think I'm one of these guys. So I understand now why I got that dirty look, why she literally ran away, even though I was trying to help her. Because most guys are out here doing this.
Excuse me, what are you doing? No, I just saw you put that underneath her dress. Absolutely you did. You absolutely did.
Ma'am, I really was.
Then show me your phone.
Yes.
No, we're going to call security.
Oh, I really...
You absolutely did. And you were following me over in the children's section.
Because I have a sister who's pregnant. Ma'am, I really wasn't.
You've been extremely close to me this whole time. Please show me your phone.
No.
I really don't mean to.
Let's get security. Because this is absolutely wrong.
I really don't mean to.
No, you obviously did.
No, ma'am. Please, I really...
No, let's get security.
He's down so bad. How damn bad do you have to be doing that?
I have it on video. You are not going to get away with anything.
Ma'am, I'm really...
You can say ma'am all you want, but we will let them
ma'am,
decide.
Ma'am.
I really promise I wasn't trying to do anything inappropriate.
Uh-uh.
I wasn't. I really wasn't. I'm not like that.
obviously you are. I literally have it on video.
But man, I'm not. I really am not. Like, I know it might have seemed that way in like the video.
No,
like,
no. Okay, listen to me.
Yes, ma'am.
We're going to wait for them to get here.
That's how you know he's really guilty, by the way. He's not even running. That's how you know he's really guilty. He's so gripped in fear. He's so surprised that he got caught red-handed that he's just standing still. He can't even walk away. Because your first instinct, you think your head's like, why is this guy running? It's like, yeah, because he's actually legitimately guilty. And he probably never thought he'd ever get caught. And he's like a deer in fucking headlights. He's just frozen. Ma'am, ma'am, ma'am. It's like, bro, that's not going to work. Calling this, ma'am is like calling her, it's like when black people call other black women auntie. That's not going to get you any favors. She's not your ma'am. You know what I mean? She definitely isn't your ma'am. In this case, she must as well be the police. She must as well be a judge. She must as well be a prosecutor. You are done.
Okay.
Like, I was just trying to look
at the books. No.
I was really just trying to look
at the
books.
No. Like, you can stop.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You were so suspicious following me all around the store. I knew you were up to no good.
You should have called him a sicko, not suspicious.
No,
call him
I
a
have
sicko.
Video of him sticking his phone underneath this lady's dress as she had bent over, videotaping her. And he followed me all around the store.
Okay. So...
We need to get the police.
Okay.
So, that to me might be the exact reason why that lady that walked past me didn't give me the benefit of the doubt and treated me like I was a fucking predator. Maybe because most of her interactions with men ends up like that. And to make matters even worse, look at this. Look at the actual guy at the end. Target peeping suspect fired from open door church. The guy works in a fucking church. He was a volunteer at Greenville Elementary School. He was part of a church and he worked in the school. A guy that's out here going to Target recording women, taking pictures and videos of up their skirts and shit, being an ultimate creep, is maybe, potentially, allegedly also a PDF. Is that even suspicious to you? There must be a real through line between people who do shit like that to women, like upskirt stuff, and also PDF stuff. It's probably not far-fetched to be into both things. Can you imagine this guy's working in the school? Can you imagine the parents seeing this guy's face all over the news, thinking, oh my God, I knew it. I had a feeling about him. Do you know what I mean? Like, I bet you so many parents are going to be like, fuck me. So this is the article courtesy of WITN. Police say they are checking the cell phone of a man arrested on Monday for secret peeping charges to see if there's any sexual activities involving children on it. WTIN has learned that Thomas Elliott was a volunteer at Greenville Elementary School. Look at his face, caught red-handed. Look at that screen. Look at that screen grab. He's literally bent over. He's literally squatting with his phone down, camera up, right next to... To be fair, as a woman, you should not let anybody get that close to you in a supermarket. The fact that he's that close to her in a supermarket is bizarre. I'm sure some of you guys have been in supermarkets where you're like crouching, looking for some seasoning or something in the bottom row. And usually people will like, you know, make an effort to kind of go around you. But I've never been in a situation where I'm squatting and somebody else squats next to me. And we're like, we're squatting, holding hands, looking at things. That's odd. Or if they do, you kind of move out of the way because, you know, when you're in a supermarket, you kind of want to do your own thing. You're not there to socialize. Maybe, I don't know, there's some guys that want to hook up, whatever. But usually you're kind of there to get your thing and go. If somebody is standing that close to you, they're up to no good, in my opinion. Nobody should be that close to you in any way, shape or form in this fucking supermarket. This isn't a train. This isn't a packed coach. This isn't you going on your way to the fucking airplane. This is you in the supermarket where it's literally designed in a way that two big carts, trolleys, two human beings, families can go down one aisle. That's how they're designed. They're designed in a way where you can go, two people can go up and down these rows and these lanes, usually, you'd imagine. So the fact that somebody's this close to you means that they're up to no good, in my personal opinion. Open Door Church in Winterville also provided a statement to WTIN saying Thomas Elliott was immediately terminated upon notification of his arrest on Monday. The church did not provide details on what was going on. Of course he was part of a fucking church, isn't it? Of course. Of course he was protected for a long time and used the church as cover. Of course. He probably learned it from some people over there too, allegedly. Who knows? Greenville police say the 21-year-old... Oh, that's what makes it sadder. The kid's only 21 and he's already doing this fucking crazy shit. he's basically done, right? There is a theory out there, and I tend to agree with it. When it comes to PDF and, like, you know, sexual deviance, you're probably better off just, like, taking them out than trying to rehabilitate them. There's no way you're going to rehabilitate somebody who's into kids or who does stuff like this. It's never going to happen. How are they going to have their come to Jesus moment when this is the stuff that intrinsically, you know, to their core, gets them hard? This is what they find sexual gratification from, or some type of gratification. How can you cure this? It's impossible. So it's either you put them in prison forever or you put them out of their misery. I vote for the latter. But hey, what do I know? 21-year-old Elliot was arrested at Target in Greenville Boulevard Monday. Video obtained by WITN shows a man arrested by police placing his phone under the woman's skirt. Another shopper there started taking a video of him with her cell phone after she said she noticed. Look at him being taken out of the... Honestly, is there anything worse about being arrested? I think being arrested in the supermarket is probably the worst place to get arrested because they're all so brightly lit, right? They're lit so brightly because they want you to buy stuff, right? The lights are placed in particular areas on the fucking aisles where they shine on certain things, bright colours everywhere. It's meant to, you know, even the floors are white to really help bounce the light. It's basically lit up like a Christmas tree. So everyone will see you. Secondly, the worst thing about being arrested, imagine being arrested when you go to a supermarket dressed like... That's why I sometimes try and make an effort when I go to supermarkets, just in case. You never know what might happen. Because the worst thing you want is to get booked from a supermarket and you're wearing your PJs or you've got short shorts on. Can you imagine anything worse than getting arrested in, like, your running gear and you have to fucking sit in a cell like that in, like, your little Lycras and shit or your little fucking Star Wars jammies? That's the worst thing in the world. Fucking hell. Another shopper there started taking a video of him on cell phone after she noticed him following her around. The woman taking the video posted the exchange between her and Elliot. By the way, you have to be so horny too and very filled with, like, bad thoughts to be taking that picture or that video and not notice this woman clearly taking a video of you. This older lady, by the sounds of it, she had, like, a very older lady kind of sounding voice, was literally standing in front of him taking his picture. But he was so consumed with fucking... goon, right? He went into coom so badly that he didn't see her. Pretty wild. We are disturbed and deeply concerned by the video footage of the individual that has been shared on social media and news outlets. Based on the footage, the individual will not be returning to our campuses as a volunteer or as an hired employee, says Tom McLean, school system spokeswoman. By the way, let's check Tom's computer too. By the way, let's just double check. Let's just see what the group chat is saying. Let's just double check. McLean said before volunteers and visitors are given campus access, they are screened through Raptor, a program that determines if it listed any sex offender database. Police said so far they haven't found any inappropriate photos of children on their man's cell phone, a search warrant. You know what? You're probably better off, if you're actually going to hire people from the school, especially young people, you're probably better off just going through their social media. You're probably not going to get anything on a sexual database because, you know, young people, I'm assuming, are going to be far more attuned to not getting caught, or they would run more so than older people, you would imagine. So if you are going to do a background check, you're probably better off as a school just getting somebody that's a bit more tech savvy, somebody in the school, maybe a kid even, to just go through and scrape somebody's social media and just see all the likes. And most likely you'll be able to see pretty quickly if this person's into some odd shit. It doesn't take much, you know. Most people have their fucking likes open. You know what I mean? Like, it's pretty easy to double check things, like, and then you'll be able to see what I want. A search warrant for the man's phone said Elliot denied any wrongdoing and showed us the recent photos he had on his cell phone. The warrant seeks, among other things, video file, digital photo, text message, and deleted information. Elliot posted a $5,000 bond and his first court date appearance on Tuesday. But yeah, this might explain why I got a very rude, you know, interaction from somebody I was trying to help the other day. But yeah, guys out there, mind your business. For the creeps out there, hope you get run over by a very, very, very heavy train. Moving on, talking about women and all that good stuff out there and guys, this story is pretty funny because it involves the one and only Kai Cenat, who got himself involved in a bit of trouble when he tried to, you know, entertain the flipping good graces of a sex worker online. And it didn't usually go his way. The reason why I want to talk about this is because I'm surprised, number one, that these young guys, these streamers who are making tons of money, have now become the, like, de facto fan bases of like OnlyFans girls. It's a weird parallel because I feel like the OnlyFans girls, no matter how young they are, they always seem to be a lot more attuned, a lot more street smart, a lot more savvy than some of these male streamers. And they seem to be able to run their pockets and just run rings around them fairly easily. In this particular case, Kaisina was able to kind of, you know, hold his own. But the fact that he was involved in this situation, I think, is a bad look for him anyway. And in general, I think this is another indication why guys are just failing online when it comes to the ability to, like, what's that thing called? When it comes to the ability to hook up with women, it just seems like a very strange place we're in at the moment where, like, it's becoming very normal for guys to pay for the company of a woman, which I feel like is incredibly abhorrent. And if anything, you shouldn't be aiming to do. It should be a last resort, if never a resort. But the fact that this is becoming a normal thing and part of dating is bizarre to me. From the fly-out culture to the buying of elaborate gifts and stuff for people that you don't know, it's all fucking insane. Let's watch the clip, courtesy of Jamari, where he rounds up some of the Kaisina issues, and then you can continue.
So there was a situation yesterday where streamer Kai Sinat was basically being held ransom, virtually that is, by an OF girl slash corn star named Layla Red. These two apparently had a relationship at some point last year after he met her during a stream.
Hey, where you at? You in here with me?
I'm in the A too.
Oh, not with me though.
I know, that's...
I'm in the A too, yeah, right. I bet you are, brother. I bet you are.
But that's why we here.
I'm gonna pull up on you.
Say on God.
And I guess things eventually got deeper for them. And now she is using their time together to try and publicly extort one of the biggest streamers right now. But she's so dumb that she didn't use the blackmail against him correctly.
Jamari's got his... you can tell Jamari's been in the gym in it. He's got his little Nike vest on. He's got his arms out, guns out, ready to fucking go. Big up Jamari.
She skipped way too many steps and went right to trying to expose him to the public. Not to even mention, this man made her sign an NDA, so a lot of...
I don't see what NDAs can do when you're hiring a sex worker, basically a prostitute. Is a prostitution illegal? What does an NDA do? I don't know, maybe I'm wrong.
What she has done is illegal. She's saying things like Kai owes her hush money and that he allegedly even paid for her to sleep with him.
Well, I mean, since I'm going to court, I might as well leak the news, the addy, the videos. Bet you gotta hit that link in my bio. Video coming soon.
This woman reminds me a lot of that other corn star that tried to expose Zion Williamson last year and went on that ridiculous Twitter tirade where she made herself look absolutely horrible in the process, all in an attempt to expose Zion. That bitch was out here tagging the NBA and Adam Silver and shit, talking about she did a tornado trick on his eggplant, and look at my boy Zion now, balling out once again. Now when it comes to Kai, he did the best thing possible and immediately responded to these allegations, and it turned into a pretty great reverse Uno moment. So this was the initial post that I saw about this situation. She came forward with this via Twitter, where I guess she was pretty much trying to promote her OF page like we saw Juice WRLD's ex-girlfriend do recently. I mean, y'all know these OF girls are absolutely shameless. They'll do anything to get that dollar.
It does go to prove just how difficult it is to generate leads as an OnlyFans girl. Because that's the one thing I've always wondered, because I've never used OnlyFans. It's probably, it's like the gift, one of its pros and negatives is that it's all behind the garden, right? It's all walled off. But then I think part of it is also, it's like you have to literally pay to do, you can't really just browse. You have to kind of pay to see one creator's content on there. And then basically you build up, you know, you might start running around and see other people and you kind of look at their stuff as well. Because I guess every post that they make is a tier or is a paid thing that you can kind of reveal. Or I think some of them have like subscription for the month, whatever it may be. But I think one of the hardest things about it is, how do you get people to actually sign up to your OnlyFans? Like, how do you generate leads? And I guess that's why some OnlyFans girls are so thirsty. Sometimes in the most viral tweet, they'll just post themselves, I bet he would stay awake for me, and there's a picture of themselves like fully naked or doing whatever they're doing. That's the only way they can really get people's attention and get people to subscribe to their things. It's quite difficult, which is probably why a lot of the most popular OnlyFans girls, again, this is just me talking out my ass here, but bear with me. It wouldn't surprise me is some of the most popular OnlyFans girls, apart from being porn stars, some of the popular ones might be, outside celebrities, very popular content creators. That's probably the only way to do it. So you do content creation, and then as a little thing, hey, click the link in bio, there's your OOF link. That's probably one of the only ways to do it, or to appear on one of those shows like Fresh and Fit, and, you know, have people maybe, you know, jump on you in that regard. But if you just a girl and you just start OnlyFans, like, how do you actually get people to actually sign up to your thing? It's quite difficult. Like, you know, it's really, because it's like doing a Patreon. Like, I've got a Patreon and I make, like, you know, I've got, I would say a great following, but I've got a decent amount of following, and I make like, what, $50 on that? Like, but then I don't really, you know, I don't really put a lot of stuff on there. I'm not consistent on it anymore. But still, like, it's not as easy as people think it is. Like, so I think a lot of OnlyFans girls out there are struggling. I don't think some of them make as much money as they would like you to believe. I think if you're a really popular OnlyFans girl, you're really popular, sorry, content creator, if you're extremely attractive, like you're in a 1 percentile, of course. But I think everybody else is fighting for scraps. This probably explains why this lady did this to Kai, because they're super desperate, which again makes it even more redacted why you would pay them any money to F if they're this desperate to scam people. Do you know what I mean? Because she's literally, you know, cutting herself off from a lifetime of getting flown out and maybe getting gifts from this guy because she wants to expose him for 5 minutes of fame. And this, again, this is a 2-day-old story. I'm covering this way later than when it's passed. People probably forgot about her anyway, so it's like very short-sighted from her in this regard. But hey, let's continue.
And obviously, I'm not going to show you these pictures because they're actually revenge corn, obviously. But she says, full video of me and Kai Cenat, link in bio. It was so good, too. And let's be honest, guys. If you see your favorite streamer or rapper or some sort of entertainer, famous person, got their tape exposed on the timeline, if your first thought is to run and go watch it, to run and go pay for it, you need to seek some sort of psychiatric help.
Oh, shut up, Jamari. When we all found out about the Drake leaks, we all clicked the video. Let's not lie. Do you know what I mean? Like, whoever you love as a content creator, if you found out they had a sex tape or a fucking picture of them doing something went viral, of course you're going to click it. It's human fucking nature. This is dumb. This is a dumb take by Jamari. Like, we all clicked that Drake picture. I know I did. I sent it to people. I probably still have it saved as a file on my phone. That's how bad it got.
She also says, when Kai know what to do when you come around. And this is where this $5,000 Apple payments allegation comes from, where she claims he was paying for the goodies. Now, this is Kai's initial response. He would go on to absolutely flame her throughout the day. Here he's showing his Apple payment history.
She saved that Layla Rhett in my phone.
By the way, this rant was really epic. Big up Kai Cenat for attacking it straight away. He did similar to what Justin Bieber did. Justin Bieber, some time ago, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, these girls tried to like expose him for being a creep or something. And he was able to just, you know, blitz them by just having all of this documented history of them in communication. Because I think they were like fans and also stan page administrators and stalkers. I don't know, they're weird girls. So he's able to disprove it straight away because he had so much evidence like to back it up. And I love that Kai Cenat did the same thing. He just showed all of his flipping Apple Pay history transactions of the time that they were allegedly together. And obviously she's not listed on there. But another thing that was fucking wild was that this motherfucker makes a lot of money. Because he sends people like family and friends and shit, 2,000, 5 grand. Like, God damn, Kai Cenat is loaded. He'd be sending people just 5 grand on just a Monday, just as a nice one. What I don't even get paid as a monthly salary, he's just sending to people as just like as $5. This guy is fucking loaded. So it's no surprise that these OF girls see him as a potential lick. But, you know, he was able to stand up for himself. So big up Kai Cenat.
On God. You're saved as Layla Red in my phone. Kiara Rush, I'm on you now. Kiara Rush, we call you KR now. All right? Go to November. Stop! Stop!
So as you guys can see there in the Apple Pay history, Layla Red for $50, okay? And I guess he's basically trying to say here, no, I did not pay to smash some old retired corn star turned OF washed up woman. All I paid for was the trip home.
$50 for your fucking dumbass Uber, bitch. I got you a fucking Uber, bitch. $50, bitch. What you talk about?
So obviously, Kai was beyond outraged in this situation, and he's really trying to go the extra mile here to not only clear his name, but to also expose this corn star. And I guess this was her response to him saying that all he paid for was the Uber, which she says, when the biggest streamer in the world pays for and lie to hide the truth, lol. She would
imagine using the fact that somebody paid for your sexual services as a diss against them when you're the one that is offering up your sexual services for money. What a weird world we live in, isn't it? How can you shame me for paying when you're the one that's doing it? Like, bizarre, but whatever. There's no shame in anything. If you want to pay, you want to pay. Me personally, I have a hardline stance against that shit. I think it's lame, especially when you're a guy that's got clout and money anyway. That'll be part of my point at the end of this, but let's just continue.
We then go on to share this message. Grown men pay for... And listen, guys, I know they say all the time to not judge a book by its cover, but if we can learn anything from the last couple videos I've made, it's that sometimes you have to use your brain, and you can just literally sometimes see a woman or see a man and know what they're all about. Now, here's where she continues to post this photo of Kai Cenat nude in bed. It looks like she took this picture while this man was sleeping, and he basically has his junk out. And
you know what reminds me? This reminds me of the epic video clip of that Brazilian model girl that took a picture of Justin Bieber after he laid down the pipe. Remember back in the day when Justin Bieber was on a tear? I think that was when he was hanging out with that kid, who's that rapper, Little Something, and he was going around to, he was really on these hot boy summer thing, which probably explains why he's so chill now and is relaxed and plays a good role as being like a young husband with Hailey Bieber, because you know he kind of had his fun. But there was a time where he went to Brazil and some woman took a picture of him in bed and he was like conked out and shit. That just reminds me of that kind of era. I've seen Justin like just mouth open, laying on a bed after fucking, you know, having some adult fun with some random fucking Brazilian girl. It's hilarious.
Yes, this would qualify as revenge corn. She says, trying to sue me after buying is wild. LOL, you go into jail too, clown. You breached the contract, and so did I. Guess
yeah, big up Case of Maces. Yeah, Case of Moses, sorry. Yeah, it was Lil Twist. Yeah, that Lil Twist era was fantastic. Justin Bieber was wilding. But that's what I think. I personally think a lot of men probably should need that in their own way. I think a lot of men need to get that out of their system. I think that's the best way to go about life. I think the idea of like being a fucking bachelor, like playing the bachelor fuckboy thing into your late 40s, 50s is really lame. I think as a dude, you should get it out of your system somewhere at one time, whether it's in your 30s, your 20s, your 40s. You have to get it out of your system. And then when you're ready to settle down, you settle down. Like, the idea of, like, continuing on being that kind of guy and always being on and, like, never not being horny is just so bizarre to me. There has to be a time where you kind of turn it off. I guess every guy's turn-off period is different, but there has to be that sort of phase because it's cool to see Justin at this age as he's at. I think Justin might be, what, mid-20s, late-20s, you know, essentially settling down and being a husband and kind of taking the, you know, taking a backseat with his career and essentially flying around the world with his wife and having fun and kind of letting her do what she's doing. It's pretty cool to see, I'm not going to lie.
Your bitch ass, a bee in a cell right next to me. And she would even take to TikTok to drop this video response to Kai.
Everybody keep asking me about all the dates. See, he's not showing y'all shit from this year. I showed y'all last year and this year. He's just showing y'all last year and he's showing from another fucking iCloud. See, that's how dumb people is. It's a whole nother iCloud, shorty. I'm showing proof from our most recent leak up, which was 3 weeks ago.
Now, to be fair to her, do I think that someone with as much money, clout, and status as Kai Cenat would only have one phone that he's doing Apple Pay on? Absolutely not.
Where he paid me to delete anything that I had on him, which was the...
By the way, just to end this, because I don't want to play the whole thing, it's ridiculous because I feel like in general, if you're a guy like Kai Cenat and you've got the money and the clout and the fame that he has, there is no reason why you should be paying anybody for their company at all. Zero. But what I believe to be true is this. I think as a guy, when you've got that kind of money, it's like your duty to make the experience with the woman incredibly fun. So if anything, I'm surprised that these dudes are going the OF route, because what it proves to me is that a lot of these guys are just impatient. They just want the sex straight away. They're not interested in a date. They're not interested in getting to know somebody. They're not interested in the quote-unquote foreplay of this fucking situation. They just want to go straight to the end, bussing, and that's it, basically it. Which I guess is what it is. But even in that case, I'm sure you can find women who don't want to be paid, who do enjoy busting as well, who would be more than up for doing that. I just feel like if that was me and I was in those guys' positions and I was their age as well, I feel like it's way more fun to have that kind of money to do fun things because you've got the money to do so. Like, hey, don't take out your wallet this entire weekend. It's all on me. Let's go and have some fun. Let's stay in this Airbnb. Let's stay in this hotel. Let's go eat at this amazing restaurant. Let's go to this fucking amusement park. Whatever, right? Let's go watch a movie. Whatever it is that you want to do. Watch a show. That is what you should be doing with that kind of money. Because I feel like when you're a guy and you're down bad, sometimes, I don't know about you guys if it's the same, but I remember when I was down bad and I was also trying to date, it was really hard because in the back of my head, I was thinking, I don't really want to waste this girl's time because I don't have the money at the moment to like do what I want to do in my head. You know, I have to wait. And then by the time you wait, she might meet somebody else or might not be in a mood because it's fleeting, isn't it? Because sometimes when you're in the flipping game of seduction, it's quite in the moment, right? Sometimes making future dates. Oh, let's meet up for Wednesday to this day. Let's meet up for Friday to this day. It can sometimes take a bit of the magic out of it. Sometimes it's in the moment. That's why it kind of works. So with that, with these guys' resources and the fact that they don't have to work a regular job, right? They could really do some really fun things. And again, I don't believe in the flyout culture. I think that's absolutely bizarre to, you know, to basically pay for some of these flights to meet you somewhere. It's very presumptuous, right? If there is a theory out there that people say that, oh, you should never, you know, invite a girl out to go on a date in the cinema or something, right? Or somewhere super secluded because it makes it look like, oh, you just want to fuck or just come to my house. If that's the case, flying somebody out is the most presumptuous thing ever, because how could the guy not think he's going to fuck at the end of it? And that kind of energy, that kind of aura, that kind of cloud is really off-putting, I'd imagine, on a date. She could probably smell that from you. The moment you meet her at the airport, or some guys are fucking probably bad-minded, probably get her to jump in an Uber on their own and come straight to the house anyway. But the moment she sees you, she can probably smell the desperation and the need to fuck from you from a mile away. She can probably smell it from you. So in my opinion, I think it's far better to just like turn all that shit down. Hey, and let's get to know each other. Let's go and hang out. Hey, by the way, I might be in your city. Let's go grab some drinks. Are you hungry? Have you eaten? Let's go get something nice to eat. What is the place you recommend? Somewhere public, somewhere cool. You just hang out, you chill. Like, that's probably what you should be doing. And in that respect, in my opinion, you have the ability to then meet all these interesting, cool girls all around the world. And then if something doesn't happen to kind of come from it, cool. But the idea of like cheating and going straight to the OF and then banging, it's like, it's just, it doesn't feel like it's worth it. Like, why would you get that kind of money just so you can go to the OF route? Especially, you're not dealing with pros. It's one thing if you're dealing with pros. If you're going to OF route, you might as well then go to escort. If you're the type of guy that wants to pay for sex, you may as well just go the escort route. Why would you go this route? Because these girls aren't escorts. They're like, you know, OnlyFans influencer model types. Who are trying to get their clout up. That's why she's exposing him. But they're not professionals. So if you want somebody to cumin, go and get a professional woman that actually knows the deal, is discreet, and just going to do what needs to be done. You can pay for a company. I'm sure there's websites you can get them. I'm sure they exist. But the fact that he went this route is, to me, another example as to why this whole scene that exists online of guys in general, you know, being infatuated with OF girls and the whole seduction thing, red pill thing, is very bizarre. It's very odd. None of these guys have any game, really. They don't really trust their game. They don't trust their ability to attract women without using their money or their clout in some regard, or their fame to kind of get them meetings. I don't know what it is, but it's just a strange world, because I personally think Kai Cena is way too young to be involved in this world anyway. And he's dealing with women who are far more mature. Was it mature? Far more experienced than him in some respects. It's just a really bad recipe. It's a recipe for disaster, which is why it ended the way it ended. I've got another weird hot take in there. I think this is an unintended consequence of people being against... what's that thing called? People being against... You remember there was that time in on the internet where people were uploading pictures and videos of themselves, you know, trying to pull girls in the street. I forgot what that whole group, I think it was like PUA, the PUA scene. When the PUA scene came crumbling down, I think this is an unintended consequence of this. When people were against, oh no, you shouldn't be catcalling women on the street. You shouldn't be trying to approach them in public and trying to get them to hook up with you and go on a date. This is the opposite. This is the unintended consequence of it. Okay, cool. Now I can't do this. Now it turns into guys online, you know, thirsting after OnlyFans girls, trying to fly out strangers, all doing it online. No in-person thing, no building up of the ability to have any riz or game. It's all just lame stuff where you're just trying to flex your money and shit to try and get someone to sleep with you. Lame, crap, disgusting, and a cheap way to kind of get to the end. If anything, not very fulfilling. And if I think, not very, it doesn't really do much for your character or help to build you in any way, shape, or form. I think every guy needs a period in their life. I've had it where you try. No, yeah, I think every guy needs a period in their life where a really ugly girl or somebody that you didn't really deem to be that attractive, but you still smashed, ends up turning it off. Like, because when girls turn the tap off, it's over. Because guys always have that fucking door open. I'm sure there's most guys out there, if their ex texts them on a random fucking Sunday at 1 a.m. in the morning, WYD, most guys are going to reply back in like 5 minutes flat, right? But girls don't have that. When a girl's over you, she's over you. So I think every guy needs an ugly girl to quote unquote turn their tap off, turn their water off and say, no more sex for you. I'm not into it anymore. Have that feeling of like being kind of rejected, sit with you, right? And then having to combat that and trying to keep that in check. Well, you probably don't. You're probably still sending DMs. You're probably still trying to beg for it and shit. Go through that whole embarrassing period because that really builds up character. Because she's ugly in your head. You think she's ugly, but she turned you down. Now you have to start from scratch again and build yourself up. Because I think you learn more by being turned down from a quote-unquote ugly chick than you do by being turned down from a hot girl. Because from a hot girl, you can rationalize in your head, oh, she's really hot. What she want from me anyway? And, oh, shoot a shoot. But I mean, you can make it seem like a good thing, like you're being some sort of like superhero and you're learning, blah, blah, blah. But when a supposed hot girl, when a quote-unquote fat girl turns you down, when somebody that you deem to be like a one turns you down, that's what builds up character. And then from there, you start to learn how to actually talk to women, how to actually make them feel, you know, comfortable, how to make them feel like, you know, like you're worth their time. That is the way to go about doing things. And I think having that kind of money that these guys have is beneficial too, because it allows you the ability to do it over and over again every week or every day. Because when you're a regular dude, it's hard. When you got a job, how are you going to take girls out for dates? How many dates can you go out with a girl in a week? How many cocktail fingers can you go? I mean, it's hard. You've got a finite amount of money. You don't have a lot of time. When you're these content creator guys, you can go on so many fucking dates. So many fucking good times. You can learn so many things from all these interactions you're having. And it obviously makes you a better fucking catch. And most likely down the line, you'll probably end up having way more quote-unquote natural riz that will probably allow you to then smash more things if that's what you want to do. But the OF route is lame. If you're going to pay for it, go for an escort. Don't go the OF route. That's what I would say. But hey, what do I know? What do I know? Next on the list, talking about minding your business. In another episode of Minding Your Business, another episode where I think most guys should just leave. What's it, women alone? But just leave women alone in general. Because even in this instance, I think I came into it with very pure intentions. But again, smacked down by the reality of the situation. So I go to this gym called Pure, right? Pure Gym. It's a really good branch chain gym because it's 24 hours. You pay like £25 plus per month, which allows you to use the gym 24 hours, 7 days per week. For someone like myself with a weird working schedule, weird sleeping schedule, it's beneficial. And also I hated it because my previous place I was at, which is a leisure center, I had like a peak time membership that only allowed me to go in there for quote unquote my monthly rate free between the hours of like 6 and 4. But if I went after 4, I had to have to pay the regular day fee. So Pure Gym is amazing because it's 24 hours, 7 days a week, and it's all self-service. You don't need to talk to anybody, blah, blah, clean, great plates, great weight, you know, great fucking free weight area, great selection of racks and stuff and equipment, all bloody good. But the weird thing is they had this strange door system. I don't know if this was introduced because of COVID or something, but it's strange. So if you're not looking at the picture, to get into Pure Gym, you have this little, these round cylinder things that open when you enter the code or you swipe your membership card, your little QR code. It opens on this side. You step into the circle thing and then it opens on the other side. So there's like two doors you have to kind of go through, which is odd because most gyms, it's just like a thing you scan and you go through the barrier. But this, you have to kind of like stand awkwardly in this little thing for like 5 seconds and then the other door opens. Now, the code thing is the annoying thing about this gym, right? The code thing here, right? The code thing, sorry, this code machine thing is sometimes very finicky. So you've got like your 5-digit passcode you can enter in if you remember it, or you have to scan your QR code and it lets you in. Now, sometimes the QR code doesn't work, sometimes the code doesn't work. But sometimes what you have to do is just like jump to another door and it usually does work. So as I was leaving the gym today, I saw these two ladies who were struggling to get in. And on the other side, she was already inside, was their friend who was like doing this, like shaking her head. So as I was coming out, I thought, oh, let me just help these girls. So I don't know, because I was coming out. So I just went and gave them a suggestion, like, because I've been there before where you're just trying to enter your code on the same machine. So I went over to them as literally they saw me coming out. I was like, hey, just to enter your code, just do this and then press OK. That's how usually it works. So sometimes if you don't press OK, it doesn't work. And they kind of looked at me like, how do they look at me? How do I describe it? They kind of looked at me like, imagine when you're doing deadlifts. Imagine you're doing 3 sets of 5 on a deadlift, really heavy. And then you're on your like 4th rep and somebody taps you on the shoulder just as you're pulling up. And you're like, what the f-? It's that kind of like frightened, pissed off, annoyed look. It was so intense. I was like, taken aback. I was like, Jesus, I'm just trying to help. And then I think one of the girls was like, yeah, we know. And I was like, but clearly you don't, because you're stuck. I was thinking that in my head. And then I was like feeling really awkward. So I felt, okay, let me say something else to kind of like, you know, make the situation not as creepy and weird as it was. I said, oh, by the way, if that doesn't work, just go on another one anyway, because sometimes the machines are creepy. I'm a bit finicky. And I got nothing. They just kind of just kept staring at the machines and didn't even glance back at me. And then I left. I think I left out a word. I went, woo! I did like a little, some sort of like, my mouth made some sort of sound as I came out of the gym. I think that was like I think that was a cringe sort of like leaving my mouth. I was like I had to do something, all right, just to kind of get it out of my body. And I was like, oh my God, again, another interaction where like they're looking at me like I'm an animal. I'm like, I'm looking at the gym. You're clearly struggling to get in. I'm not even like stopping and chatting. It's not like I'm like standing there like, hey girls, my name is like Brad. It's literally like a walk-in comment. Like, hey, by the way. And I'm still getting like, what the fuck is going on? And I realized I was like, this is another example of the skirt situation. It's just mind your business. This is it. The key to it is minding your business. This is it. The key to it is minding your business. Leave people alone until they ask you for your help, which is really bad, because sometimes people, you see them in like need, you want to help. But I think sometimes, and this is just me speaking from my own side of things, I honestly think in most cases, when people are trying to help people in public, it's more so because you want to appear like the good guy. You know, you want to appear like the good guy. So you're like going out to help. And it's all self-serving. You're almost virtue signaling and hoping somebody sees this good deed. Oh, look at that guy. Look at him helping that old lady across the road. Look at that guy picking up that kid's toy and giving it to the mum. Look at that guy helping those girls at the thing. But it may be in their head, they're thinking, hold on, why are you mansplaining to us how to enter a 5-digit code on a keypad that clearly has OK button written at the bottom of it? We know how to do this. You know what I mean? Like, do you think it's our first time at a gym? So in their head, they're looking like, hold on, who the fuck asked? We didn't ask you for your help, number one, man. We didn't ask you for your help. Number two, you don't mansplain us a 5-digit code. Number three, it's clearly obvious that we have to press the numbers. And like, do you know what I mean? Like, if we didn't, like, it's so presumptuous of myself and others to think people need your help. Oh yeah, I have to come in and save the day. No, you don't, most of the time. And if you do, guess what? You run the risk of being made to feel like a fucking Dalia. You run the risk of being made to feel like a fucking Brian Callen. You run the risk of being made to feel like an absolute dirtbag because you offered help without somebody asking you. That's your reward, which is a good thing, I think. I think it's a good lesson for all men to learn. And I think I've learned that very clearly these last couple of days. Mind your business, mind your business, mind your blood clot business. Okay? That's it. That's it. That's it. Because honestly, exactly, Uche, like, Uche knows, the sound that left my body, I swear to God, it wasn't even like, it was like a reflex. Like, my body just couldn't handle how insanely rudely I was spoken to and dealt with. But also it was I very quickly realized that situation. Oh yeah, you deserve that. You deserved it. You thought you were going to try and come in there like the hero, like the guy, hi, whoa, whoa, whoa. And they told you, nah, shut the fuck up, leave us alone. I was like, oh God, you know? Anyway, lesson learned, innit? Lesson is fucking learned. Lesson absolutely learned. Moving on from that one. Moving on. I saw this clip, right? I saw this clip on the interwebs again. And it reminded me of something because I've had this thing where I honestly do think I have like a list of people in my head who I think about if ever when I eventually make it in whatever field I want to pursue or whatever I'm trying to do, when I'm lit, when I'm clouted up, I have these people in my head who maybe, you know, have shitted on me or maybe have kind of turned the other way and kind of diminished or kind of dismissed me in general, or just not giving me any kind of whatever thing I think of, rejection, whatever it may be. There might be a list of people in my head who I think about. But when I really, really think about it, I don't really remember who they are. They kind of like, it's like a person I can think of in my head is an amalgamation of different people. But I can't specifically think of somebody. Because in my head, actually, I have this really odd and bizarre way where if somebody crosses me or somebody does something to me that I don't like, or somebody kind of dismisses me or something or counts me out, instead of me remembering them and putting them on a list of like, okay, I'm going to get revenge on you, I just kind of lead by my actions. Okay, cool. I'm going to show and prove with my actions and with my results and with my achievements and whatever it may be, accomplishments, all that sort of stuff. But I don't remember them specifically. But what I do have is the ability to delete them from my brain. So I won't ever remember who they are. It just will be like, so weird. I think it's a way of kind of like dealing with trauma, which is not really constructive, to be fair. You should probably deal with it properly, address it, speak to it, and put it out there in the open. But I do like most men and just kind of push it down and repress it. Or like most men, I do a fucking frag. Or like most men, I do a fucking hard reset and I just delete the whole thing. So I don't remember. But oddly enough, if I see you and it always clicks back in and all the memories flood back. So I never kind of can be nice as Michael B. Jordan was in this video. Because if I see you again, I remember, oh yeah, shit, this is the person that did this and this to me. It's going to be a situation in real life. Either, you know, something will happen because, you know, I have sometimes the tendency to like see red and do some unforgivable, regrettable things sometimes. But in this regard, I think Michael B. Jordan dealt the situation amazingly well. This is Michael B. Jordan at some film premiere. I think it's for his movie, I think Creed. And he's on a red carpet and he happens to bump into a lady who's now working as a hip hop radio presenter who used to kind of quote unquote bully him in high school. And she said one time in an interview back in the day when Michael B. Jordan was coming up that Michael B. Jordan was always corny. And I think she said basically when they grew up more, she was like, oh yeah, he was the actor kid in class who was always like trying too hard to like do his lines in front, like whatever. She was hating basically because, you know, he sounded like every theater kid you've ever been to school with. But then of course, some years go by and then Michael B. Jordan becomes Michael B. fucking Jordan. She's on the red carpet interviewing him at his fucking movie premiere. And he reminds her that he knows who she is. And he also reminds her that he saw the clip of her recently where she said that he was corny. So this exchange is fucking beautiful because in my head, I wish I could be Michael B. Jordan. I wish I could have that grace to even stand there and speak to somebody like this or even remember who they are. But I think if I did remember who they are, that would be a domestic violence situation. That would be like, I might go to prison if I was him. It wouldn't end this way. But the fact that Michael B. Jordan dealt with it in this way says a lot about him and his character. And the fact that I couldn't do it says a lot of things about my own character. Let's play the clip.
Yeah, Michael B. Jordan, the director and the star of Creed 3. And, you know, we know each other.
Look at the look.
Way back all the way
to look given
Chad Science in Newark, okay?
Corny kid, right?
No. I
look at the look he's giving
her. That. Misquoted, yeah.
Look
for
at the
sure.
I heard
did
it.
Not hear me say,
misquoted.
I said we used to make fun of the name. But, yeah, he is obviously killing things out here. Yeah, Michael B.
How embarrassing. Look at his eyes. Look at his eyes. The corny kid, right? Huh? The corny kid. Oh, I would have been tempted to fucking headbutt her like fucking iShow Speed headbutts his computer when he hits a certain amount of fucking subscribers. I would have dived head first into those big obnoxious fucking Tom Ford, Michael Kors sunglasses, you know, glasses that probably don't have prescription lenses in it, and split her head open. I would have happily caught a charge for that one. Happily would have been in the mugshot fucking smiling like fucking neon if that was me. Absolutely loved it. But again, would I have remembered her if it happened? Is it constructive to keep a list of people that you hate, that you want to do this to? I don't know. But best believe, when I do finally get on, just telling you this as a PSA, as a FYI, when I get on, speak with fucking intention. When I get on, if you hear about some crazy situation that went down with me, oh my God, this streamer got involved in a physical altercation, believe it. And 9 times out of 10, keep in mind that the person who I got involved with was probably somebody that shitted on me. That's what happened, okay? If ever you hear of me getting into a skirmish online, or you hear of something, or you see my mugshot somewhere, more than likely, it's because of a situation like this. You know? I met somebody who said something maybe in passing, or maybe left me on scene or something, and I saw them in real life, and they tried to be buddy-buddy and say, oh my God, I see you, man. You're doing your thing, man. Yeah, I'm just trying to be like you. And I just went fucking, you know, I went fucking, what you call it? I went Khabib against Conor that time when he jumped into the crowd. I just went nuts. I went fucking full Super Saiyan. Because I don't think I could do what Michael B. Jordan did here. He was very graceful. He was very grown up, very gracious. And reminded her, I'm the corny kid, right? And she was stuttering all over the place. One more time.
Yeah, Michael B. Jordan, the director and the star of Creed 3. And, you know, we know each other. We go way back all the way to Chad Science in Newark, okay?
The corny kid, right?
No, I did not say that. Misquoted for sure.
Misquoted.
Did not hear me say. I said we used to make fun of the name.
What's
but
up?
Yeah, he is obviously killing things out.
Yo, big up Young Old Vibes. We'll bail you with super chats. Ding! Young Old Vibes said, imagine fucking Streamlabs alerts going off in the fucking police in the police office. That's how they get me out. No, you have to go to my Streamlabs. It's streamlabs.com/Agostino079. Yeah, that's where you... No, click the link at the top of my stream super chat thing. Hold on. Let me just link my PayPal. Can I link my PayPal to this? Can I? Oh, man. Honestly, I live for this day, but I don't also. Because, again, I think part of the sick thing about doing your own thing and kind of, you know, persevering despite people counting you out is not remembering them. It's just keeping, you know, doing your thing and just letting your fucking actions speak, letting the results of your work speak and kind of getting people back, you know, having your revenge with your success, because, you know, dwelling on those things is bad. But I also think it's really bad that I have this ability to legitimately delete people from my brain to the point where I don't remember who they are until I see them in person. You know, then I'm like, oh yeah, shit, that's that person. You know what I mean? But before that, I've never thought about them in the slightest, never crossed my mind ever. And then suddenly when you see them, all those thoughts come flushing back in your brain. And you're like, you know what? I want to K-I-L-L-U right now. It's bad to say that, but again, this is a podcast where I like to be honest. I like to give you my real opinion on things, and that is exactly how I'd react. So if you did hear, or if you do hear of a story of me, you know, getting into some trouble, maybe doing some time behind bars over some physical altercation, best believe the reason why it happened is because that person shit on me. Okay, cool. Anyways, let's continue. So, as most of you guys know, Drizzy Drake came back and absolutely surprised everybody by dropping one of the best diss records of all time. Why do I say that? Because we all counted him out, myself included. I legitimately thought there was no chance Drake would have the gumption, the nerve, the temerity to say people's names and clap back, especially because Kendrick's been poking at him for ages. The Metro Boomin thing happened recently. The Future thing happened recently, which is really sad for me because being a big Future fan, big Drake fan, I always have loved their collaborations. I was looking forward more so to a fucking, what's that thing called? What Time to Be Alive number 2. But as I think Joe Budden correctly pointed out one time ago, he always noticed there was an issue because ever since that Thames record, which features Drake and Future, there's been no replay of that record. They don't perform it. Thames has done a lot of tours, a lot of shows in North America. Future and Drake don't come and perform and do this song. There's never been a sequel to it. So it just feels odd what happened. And now we know that Drake and Future had fallen out. Anyway, the Future Metro Boomin album comes out. One track featured on there is Like That. Amazing fucking tune. Great production. Metro fucking spazzed on that fucking tune. And Kendrick's got a verse right at the end where he goes at everybody and predominantly attacks Drake. And everybody was thinking, oh my God, Trent just set the fucking bar up. Let's fucking go. I was one of the people who thought the Like That record was sweet, but it wasn't that bad that it warranted a response. But I think because of what happened after the fact, because of all the people that were now aligning with Metro and Future, it did warrant a response. But I also was not surprised that it took Drake so long to reply, because he's having to go at The Weeknd, Metro, Future, Rick Ross, Nav, Ja Morant. Do you know what I mean? He's going at so many people at once because it seems that the whole industry is kind of turning against him. Why is anyone's opinion, but I think the record itself fucking slaps. So I'm going to play it because I absolutely love the record, and we're going to break down some of my favorite lines in the record. So this is Drake, Push-Ups. This is a leaked record. It's not officially out on streaming yet at the moment. When it does appear streaming, it's going to be fucking fantastic. But this is Drake, Push-Up, and I fucking love this song.
Hey, I could never be nobody number one fan. Your first number one, I had to put it in your hand. You pussies can't get booked outside America for now. The way you doing splits, bitch, your pants might rip.
What's going on there? Why is that for? Okay, one more time. Let's go back again. One more time. Let's go back again. Let's go fucking back again. Let's go.
Hey, I could never be nobody number one fan. Your first number one, I had to put it in your hand. You pussies can't get booked outside America for now. I'm out in Tokyo because I'm big in Japan.
By the way, I think that's an important bar to resonate with, because a lot of people are saying, what's the beef that everyone has with Drake? I don't think it's that deep. I honestly do think it's more so just a jealousy thing, because he's been on the top for so long. He's the real hit maker, right? When he jumps on records, when he features people, they usually go top 10, if not number one. So I think that dominance from Drake, people just can't handle it anymore. It's just too much to take. He's not slowing down. He's not going on any kind of break. He did have a time where he was like, oh, I've got a tummy ache because I've been taking half a perk, whatever it may be. But so far, he's been pretty resilient in that regard. He's very active for a level of a star he is. He's very, very fucking active. He's always fucking dropping music, always performing. So I just think it's pure jealousy, because he's the only one that's able to, go to Europe and sell out shows, do a ton of shows in the North America and sell those out. I'm sure if you go South America, he'll fucking destroy. He hasn't even touched Africa yet. That'll be a fucking crazy situation. So he has a lot of opportunities to make money and to kind of just increase his fucking fame. Whereas the other guys, their ceiling is kind of being reached a little bit. And also Drake has the musical range. I mean, he does different genres. He jumps on different type of beats, and he reaches out to different people in different times of the world, whatever it may be. So I just think that dominance is just getting annoying for some people, to the point where they're like, enough. We don't want to keep relying on this guy. We don't want to keep going to him for number one records. We want to be able to have a bit of room for us to kind of breathe, because he's just overbearing. He's number one. He's all that people listen to. All our girls listen to him. All our family members listen to him. He's just too omnipresent. So it almost feels like, that scene where fucking Caesar gets stabbed by everybody in the collar, in the court, in the back and shit, because they just had fucking enough of his role. And they're all cowardly, so they all kind of wait for one person to do it, and then they all jump in and kind of start stabbing him in the back. That's what it kind of feels like. But Drake ain't going out in as easy as Caesar did.
I'm the hit maker, y'all depend on. Backstage in my city, it was friend zone. You won't ever take no chain off of us. How the fuck you big stepping with a size 7 man's on?
I love that. It's such a funny insult, by the way. How the fuck you big stepping with a size 7 man's on? I love that. How can you be a big stepper when you're a size 7? It reminds me of this time back in the day when I was, in heavy in the London sneaker scene. And one guy that owned a sneaker store in London said he helped to, Kanye to, helped to sell Kanye some shoes. And he said Kanye is really odd because he's got a complex about his shoe size. He says that Kanye, officially is a size 8 or something, but he always buys size 10s. because he wants to appear like he's got bigger feet, because he thinks, like, you know, guys with bigger feet, bigger schlongs, whatever. So this guy was trying to, no, this is your size. You're a size 8, 8.5. And he didn't want to take it. He's like, no, I'm a size fucking 10. So eventually, you know, Kanye gets Kanye's way. And he left there with a Jordan 3 and a size 10, which, if you know anything about Jordan 3s, you know they're fucking big. So he purposely bought a shoe that's already really big looking in a two sizes bigger than his actual shoe size, so he could appear more quote unquote manly. Funny.
This the part with the bite, nigga, what's up? I know my picture on the wall when y'all cook up. Extortion, baby, whole career, you been shook up. This top so you drop it, give me 50 likes or push up.
So that's what I didn't understand at first, but now I've heard that allegedly, Kendrick, to get out of his deal with Top Dog, allegedly had to give them 50 million. And he also, they managed to put in a deal where they get 50% of whatever he makes with his new label, PG something that he's doing now. And I think it's only him and Baby Keem on the label, right? His cousin. But that's mad, isn't it? To get out of Top Dog, he had to give them 50 mil. This goes to show that black people do black people worse than any people, isn't it, right? You even see in the podcast world, right? In the podcast world, you see big podcasters like, you know, Macworld, like a Macwop and shit, you know, with his show, The Apollo, refusing to give his friends even just $100 as like a gesture of being co-host on his show. And you also see Top Dog, right? Being this black-owned label, West Coast, you know, incredibly tied there to the streets, to the history of hip-hop over there. And, you know, for everything fucking, you know, for everything Kendrick Lamar did for that label, right? For everything he did to that label, why are they taxing him like that? For everything he's done for that label, why would they tax him like that when he's like, you know what, I want to fucking leave now? But they're taxing him in a way where allegedly they said, hey, you have to fucking give us 50 million to get out of your deal. And we're also going to take 50% of whatever you're making now going forward. That's what Drake is alluding to. Whether or not it's true or not, it's mad. But also it's a triple entendre, because it also lends back to that iconic video of Kendrick doing those the prison burpees, right? Where he's like, it's pretty good to be fair, because they're very hard to do. It looks easy, but it's not hard. It's really hard. Where like he does two push-ups, stands up, you know, does the fucking fist-to-fist stance, gets back again. So it's a triple entendre in that regard. Amazing bar, though.
Hood, your last one brick, you really not on shit. They make excuses for you cause they hate to see me lit. Pull your contract cause we gotta see the split. The way you doing splits, bitch, your pants might rip.
And this is the best thing about Drake. The way you do splits, your pants might rip. These type of, like, he's the master at these type of diss records, but also making them fun and entertaining, because you know this is gonna be sung word for word in the clubs. You know girls are gonna be twerking their asses when this type of bar comes up, screaming at the top of their lungs. He makes these type of records fun. He don't just get in a booth and just starts angrily airing somebody out. He's still going to air you out, but he's going to make it a fun record so people can have a good time with it, they can bop to it, and it's got replay value. This is the hard thing about beefing nowadays. Beefing nowadays, or diss records or whatever, isn't what it used to be. It used to be back in the day, you could just like outbar somebody and that's how you win. Nowadays, it has to be entertaining. The entertainment factor is a big part of it. The rollout factor about it, the bars, like, it's all part of the fucking and sometimes that's why maybe Pusha T was unique, because Pusha T was one of the only people who really kind of gagged Drake, because that's one thing, being a big Drake fan myself, you have to say he took the L on that one. Pusha destroyed him, because he was able to make quote-unquote fun records, make them quotable, make every line mean something too, because that's something that people don't give Pusha T credit for. Every line meant something. There was no throwaway. Every line was like a stab, 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 stab. Like, he was going at him super hard. And I think Drake probably learned from that and did the same thing on this record. Every line is a diss. Every line could be seen as a diss. He's revealing things. He's hinting at things. He's suggesting things. But he's like, hey, this is... And it's also kind of tame, because you feel like he's purposely like, hey, I'm being nice to you right now. But if you drop something else, then I'm gonna come with a fucking hammer. Are you ready for it? Okay, cool.
You better do that motherfucking show inside the bitty. Maroon 5 need a verse, you better make it witty. Then we need a verse for the Swifties. Top say drop, you better drop and give them 50. Pimp squeak pipe down, you ain't in no big three. Scissor got you wiped down, Travis got you wiped down, Savage got you wiped down. Like your label, boy, you in a scope right now.
I love that you mentioned that, because I think there's a theory that, you know, the top three thing. So far, we've not got actual footage of Drake saying anything about top three. I think he's mentioned something about, you know, Kendrick and J. Cole being his peers at the top of the game. But I don't think he's mentioned this acknowledgement that we're in the top three. He probably thinks he's far above these guys, which I do believe. I think Drake is far above both of those dudes commercially, just in terms of ticket sales and shit, and just too much. And I think the one thing to kind of note about it, as much as people don't want to admit it, like, when the rap happens, when the Spotify rap happens at the end of the year, why is it that Ye and Drake are always in people's top lists, even though people say they don't like Ye because of his political opinions and the White Lives Matter stuff and the Trump stuff? But at the end of the year, when it really comes down to collating and recording what people actually listen to day to day, it's Drake. It's Ye. It's the obvious people. It's unfortunately it. So the lack of acknowledgement that he has for top three makes sense, because there is no real top three when he's the number one guy. And that's probably the main reason why they all hate him. He's probably fucking all their girls, which is obviously annoying, because I think all rappers share girls anyway. But he's probably taking them all. These girls are also talking very glowingly. Because imagine if you're the guy that secretly hates Drake, and then the girl that you're fucking is talking about how nice he was. Oh, I met Drake. He flew me in a jet. He took me to the fucking mansion. Oh my God. Like, just really talking glowingly, because she thinks you guys are friends. But you're not. And you're hating everything about it, but you can't show that you're hating, because it's going to make you look like a hater. So you kind of keep it in, and then when the record comes, that's when you kind of drop it. So maybe that's what's happening here. I don't know, who knows. And you gon' feel the aftermath of what I write down. I'm at the top of the mountain, so you tight now. Just to add this talk with your ass, I had to hike down. Big difference between Mike then and Mike now. Big difference between... Oh, yeah, come on. Drake is spazzing. What the fuck is this, a 20v1, nigga? What's a prince to a king? He a son, nigga. Get more love in a city that you run, nigga. Make sure shut your whole ass up and make some drums, nigga. That bit is going to be replayed at raves and festivals so many fucking times. And I think it's brilliant, too, because Metro Boomin, as much as I love him, he is quite sensitive and emotional, and I've never really understood why he has a problem with Drake. His one seems to be way more personal than the others, just in terms of petty, sorry, because I get the feeling like he just had a bad experience with Drake in the studio, and since then he hasn't been able to let it go, like a little tit for tat. Maybe Drake told him to move the drums over here and he didn't like it, the way he spoke to him, whatever. But I like that he gave him that, you know, cut out the beat and just reduced him to like a drum boy, which is obviously not true, because Metro's one of the best producers of hip hop in all time. But to reduce him as like drummer boy is fucking incredible. It really does take away anything he's ever achieved. You're just a drums guy. Shut the fuck up, man. Yeah, I'm the sixth guy, I'm the front runner. Y'all nigga manager was Charles' little blunt runner. Playing a six and you boys ain't even come from it. And when you boys got rich, you had to run from it. That's a good one, though, because the six is kind of made up, but it's still basically saying, hey, you were from the hood, but once you made your money, you couldn't come back because, you know, you did some fuck shit in the hood. People want to get you, but I'm good in the hood because I'm the sixth guard. Six, six, six. Cash flowing, able bread out here tricking. Shit we do for bitches, he doing for niggas. Jets, whips, chains, wiki, wiki, wiki. Imagine shit he did for bitches, he did for niggas. That's funny, though, because a lot of them do it. I think Drake is also maybe guilty of it, right? This idea of, like, buying your friends, like, Pateks and, like, G-Wagons and Bentleys and stuff. It's like, bro, isn't that what you're meant to be doing for your side bitch? Why are you doing it for the niggas? It's all odd, but I think that's just rich guy shit. It's all flexing shit. Maybe it's also tax write-off shit. Who knows? But either way, I thought it was funny for him to bring up, and, you know, maybe that's a future disc. Maybe it's a Travis diss, who knows? Spinning like you trying to fuck, boy, you tripping, boy, you tripping. Drizzy Chippendale, probably got your bitch in nail. I just got them done, boy, don't make me at the Chippendale. Rolling live stage, I would turn, that was slick as hell. Shit'll probably change if it be him start to kiss and tell. That could be, kiss and tell line could be Future, Ciara's song, obviously. And it also could be Travis Scott, in that they both have high profile baby mothers, but they also notoriously, you know, private about their relationship and what they got up to and the fuck shit's happened. So he's just thinking, hey, if I want to get the information about what you're doing behind the scenes, it's going to be dark for you, so chill out. Hugs and kisses, man, don't tell me about no switches. I'll be rocking every fucking chain I own next visit. Hey, I'll be with some bodyguards like Whitney, top say drop your little midget ass, better fucking. That's a really scathing bar. The suggestion here is that allegedly Kendrick's wife had an affair with one of his bodyguards. I don't know if they're separated or not, but that's the what he's suggesting. Now, to me, this is very interesting because we don't know anything about Kendrick's private life because it's very private and he's also very low key. But this also might explain why J. Cole bowed out of the beef. Maybe J. Cole didn't bow out of this beef because he thinks he can't out-rap these guys. He might have bowed out because he was worried about what might be exposed about him in public. Because he's also notoriously private. He doesn't have any, like, Drake's the only one in the court, in the trio of people who are beefing, or maybe in the beef. Drake's probably the only person who we know a lot about. Maybe even Future. Like, in, like from, like, girls and, like, baby mothers and side pieces and shit, right? They're the only people that we know a lot of stuff about. And some of it's true, some of it's false. But the other dudes, we don't really know much, maybe because they're not as famous or because they're quite private. So maybe J. Cole was more worried about people finding out that he likes to fuck strippers or that he's got a million side pieces or something, even though he tries to, you know, pretend like he's perfect and he's this church dude and a beautiful and the best husband. Maybe that's what he was worried about. He was worried about the secrets that may come out that he didn't want the public to know about. That's why he bowed out the way he did. Now, if it was me and I was Kendrick, I'm still going to attack you and still reveal those secrets anyway to really bury you. I don't care that you wave the white flag. I'm still going to shoot you in the head just to make sure that it's done. Okay, you waved the white flag, cool, but now I'm going to shoot you. So I think that's what he kind of bowed out about because we had, I'd never, number one, again, I don't really, you know, I like Kendrick. I'm not a big Kendrick fan, but I didn't even know his wife was called Whitney. And I had no idea about this rumor that he, that she might have fucked the bodyguard. So imagine the kind of stuff that they get up to behind the scene, which again is weird because it shows you just how wrong these guys live, innit? That instead of warring with bars and stuff, you're more worried about your secrets getting revealed. So you publicly embarrass yourself and essentially ruin your legacy in hip hop and your ranking as a top MC because you're worried people might find out your secrets and shit about what you get up to in the bedroom or whatever it may be. That's how wrong these guys are living, which kind of brings back to that whole phrase people say, isn't it? About whatever you do in the dark will come to light. If you're doing some fuck shit, maybe just stop doing the fuck shit instead of trying to hide the fuck shit. You know, that's what probably you should do. If you're doing some fuck shit and you get exposed, maybe use that as a chance to kind of change your ways. Be like, you know what? I'm going to stop doing this fuck shit because it's bad, because it makes me look horrible. Instead of just trying harder to hide it. that's what J. Cole did. He's like, look, I'm out. Don't get me. It's almost like, you know, when you're young and you were dissing each other as friends, especially boys, you're all in a circle ribbing each other. And then, you know, one person doesn't have any good disses. So like, look, I'm not getting involved. I'm not laughing. No, you're here. You have to get involved. You have to snap back. And, you know, J. Cole basically ran away because he didn't want to snap back, or he didn't want anyone to find out that he smashed some girl on baddies or something. Cause that would really ruin J. Cole's image in some people's eyes because he seems to be so perfect and so, like, you know, earthy and, like, you know, spiritual. If people found out that he fucking smashed Natalie Nunn or something, right? Imagine if it came out that J. Cole had an affair with, like, Natalie Nunn, everyone would be like, what the fuck? If J. Cole smashed Sukiyana or something, you know what I mean? That's probably what he's really nervous about. So he kind of said, you know what? I waved the white flag. I'm not doing this anymore. See you later, guys. I love that. I'm gonna take your latest girl and cuff it like I'm Ricky. By the way, I think this is my personal opinion. Can you just agree with me here a little bit? I think it's deplorable when these women agree to, like, partaking in a beef with these guys, rappers. Like, imagine Rick Ross was dealing with this one chick because they're beefing. Drake DMs the chick and gives her personal tickets, you know, sends her tickets with his signature and shit to come see him at the show. They hang out, all these pictures and stuff. So I hate it when these women willingly get involved in the beef, knowing that, oh, the guy I was previously involved with hates this new guy that's trying to holler at me. Let me get involved. It's really scummy. I think it's bad on all sides, but it's more specifically bad on the woman's side of things. Because it's like, you know how much these guys hate each other because you're dealing with one guy. Why are you getting involved and basically stoking the fires? You know what I mean? It's super lame when they agree to it. I think it's disgusting, really. Like, don't agree to it. Obviously, it's a flex on Drake's part. It looks cool because, you know, you've got Drake's girl and you're at your fucking live show. She's in your box. You're pictured of her afterwards with your arm around her and shit, right? You're doing the whole, like, what's this thing? You're doing the whole fucking, Benny Butcher thing, right? With, what's his name? With Freddie Gibbs' girl. But I think it's lame on the girl's part to partake in the beef, knowing that the guys that you're talking to have beef themselves is super, super lame.
happily, he jumping in, this nigga turning 50. Every song that made it on the chart, he got some jizzy. Spend that little check, you gotta stay up out my business. Nigga, shout out to the hooper that be busting out the gritty. We know why you mad, nigga, I ain't even tripping.
That's amazing. So Drake allegedly has beef with Ja Morant. Can you believe that? So Drake has beef with Ja Morant for some reason, right? And allegedly the reason is because Ja Morant, because Drake, do you remember there was that picture of Drake going on a date with some woman in a baseball stadium? It was some crazy flex. Like Drake went on a date with this woman. I think this is her, right? I forgot her. She's like, I think she's a basketball coach or the mum of a basketball player, I think. That's what her name is. Let's see the actual picture here. I think I've got it up on my Google here. I think that's the one. I think they're beefing over this woman, which is bizarre because she's old anyway. I think she's in her 30s, so it's not like she's a young girl. But also, if I'm not mistaken, she's like the mum of another basketball player who Ja Morant is friends with. So I'm like, hold on. If I'm the friend, I'm more annoyed that my friend is trying to bust down my mum than Drake is. Do you know what I mean? So Drake says in that bar, shout out to the hooper out here busting the gritty. I know why you mad, nigga. I ain't even tripping, right? Which is obviously him throwing the jab that he allegedly dated this woman called Joanna Lyre, who I think is the mum of a current basketball player who Ja Morant is friends with. But if you remember directly, Drake was flexing with this woman because, what's her name? Her name is Joanna Lyre, right? They went on a date in like a baseball stadium. He rented an entire baseball stadium. I think TMZ took pictures of her in a helicopter. Yeah, that's the one, see? Look, this is what you if you're Kai Cena, I'm sorry, this is what you should be doing. I'm not trying to smash random OnlyFans girls. You should be doing these really fly dates where he rented out this entire baseball stadium and had a chef cook up dinner and shit. That's what you should be doing. Not some lame shit like trying to pay an OnlyFans girl $5,000 to bang. You should be doing this fly ass shit, this player shit, when you've got millions like those guys are doing. This is what you should be doing. Helicopters all above, taking pictures of them, blah, 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 blah. But yeah, I don't know. Drake definitely has a type, innit? Drake likes his things big and curvy, innit? Because this is a tall woman. She's fucking stacked. She's... Drake definitely has a type. Jesus Christ, she looks like an assault course. Do you know what I mean? She is an assault course. But yeah, I find that insane. They're beefing, innit? Like, why isn't the... Because I think this Lyla woman, she's got a son, if I'm not mistaken. Who's her son? Joanna. What's her name? Joanna Lyla. She's got a son who's a basketball player, I think. Yeah, there you go. See? Her son's a basketball player. And I think he's in the league. So it's like, if I'm Ja Morant, if I'm the son, I'm more pissed at Ja Morant trying to smash my mum as opposed to Drake. Because her and Drake are like age mates. Because she, I think, had the kid young. So it's like... I don't know. It's all fucking bizarre. It's all weird. It's all wild. But it is what it is. It is what it is. Go back to the track.
All that little heartbroken Twitter shit for bitches. This for all the top dog. Drop and give me 50. Drop. In that fucking song, y'all got to not start to beef with us. This shit been brewing in a pot, now I'm heating up. I don't care what Cole think, that dot shit was weak as fuck. Champagne tripping, he is not fucking easing up. Nigga calling top to see a top, wanna piece it up. Top, wanna piece it up. Top, wanna piece it up. Nah, pussy. Now you on your own when you speaking up. You don't roll deep to this, you not fucking beeping up. Begging cops or not, boy, you not fucking beating us. Numbers wise, I'm out of here, you not fucking creeping up. Money wise, I'm out of here, you not fucking sneaking up. Cornball, y'all show money. In that fucking song, y'all got to not start to beef with us. One this shit time. Been brewing in a pot, now I'm heating up. I don't care what Cole think, that dot shit was weak as fuck. Champagne tripping, he is not fucking easing up. No. Nigga calling top to see if top wanna piece it up. Top wanna piece it up. Top wanna piece it up. Nah, pussy, now you on your own when you speaking up. You don't roll deep to this, you not fucking beeping up. Begging cops or not, boy, you not fucking beating us. Numbers wise, I'm out of here, you not fucking creeping up. Money wise, I'm out of here, you not fucking sneaking up. Cornball, y'all show money, merch money, feed us. I'ma let you niggas work it out because I seen enough. This ain't even everything I know, don't wait to theme enough. This ain't even everything I know, don't wait to theme enough. Drop and give me 50 on you, fuck niggas, teaming up.
What
platform
you smoking on,
Kendrick?
So Amazing reply back. Big up fucking Drake. I fucking loved it. Hip hop is fucking back finally. If anything, I'd say it's 1-1, or maybe Drake is one up now if you count this is the first one, but I think it's 1-1 at the moment. If you count like that being number one, I think this is definitely 1-1. You think he's put everyone on notice. I don't think there's any real beef with them. I'm loving the side beat between Drake and Rick Ross trolling each other online. I think that's been super fun to watch, but I don't think it's that serious. It probably is revolving around girls, around money, but mostly around Drake's dominance. They're just tired of it. They're all tired of having to rely on Drake. They're all tired that he's the main guy. They're all tired of the fact that all their bitches are talking about him. Their baby mother's talking about him. Their kids love him. It's just too much. They can't handle it. And they want to bury him. And they want to stab him. And they want to take over. But obviously, he's not relinquishing his power or his control without a fucking fight, which I love. So big up Drake for being a bad boy. Big up Drake for being a fucking bad boy. Moving on. Updates from Coachella. Coachella weekend one happened. One of the wildest things to happen over Coachella weekend one that everyone's been going crazy over is this video, which features Justin Bieber and Jaden Smith embracing while they meet each other behind the scenes, walking around Coachella. Coachella seems to be the one festival, especially North America, that all the celebrities love to go to. I'm assuming because they probably get sent free tickets, or because it's a good time to get some easy content, you know, whatever, put your face out there, marketing, promotion wise, whatever. It seems to be the one festival they all seem to really like to go to. But I think it's also because of the range of musicians anyway, because it's quite a good one in terms of like, because I think European festivals like Primavera are probably better for in terms of range. But I think Coachella does a good job of balancing it between the hip hop and the pop stuff and the indie stuff and the DJ stuff. Right, it does a good balance. International guests, like, they do a really good balance in terms of getting people on. Obviously, the tickets are probably overpriced and the experience is a bit mad. I've seen people do vlogs on it and how hard it is to get places and shit. But I think as a pure music festival, it is quite decent. So I see why they go there. This video in particular, I don't get why it's so outrageous, why people are going crazy about it. Because if anything, this just highlights how weirdly homophobic people are in North America. Because this is a nothing thing. This happens like all the time with boys and your friends, like just embracing each other in this silly way and pretending to whine on him. Everyone's now looking at it as like Jaden Smith is like Justin Bieber's side piece or something. It's like, bruh, they're really, really good friends. They've been good friends and close for a very long time. Sometimes when you see your boy, you just want to bend him over and give him a little bang on the back, innit? Just to kind of remind him that you're boys. What's wrong with that? What's wrong with giving your boy a couple of strokes in public just before you head to the fucking stage? What's wrong with, you know, tonguing down your boy? What's wrong with giving your boy a little tug quickly before you go grab a hot dog before you go and watch fucking, I don't know, Post Malone perform? Haven't you ever kind of rubbed up against your boy one time with your flipping dick out? It's standard, man. This is particularly normal. I don't see there's anything wrong with this. You know, it's not gay if you're both fucking laughing. It's not gay if you're both fully clothed. What's the issue here? I really don't see the issue. I was surprised this became a big thing. I would have thought, especially in this progressive world that we're in now, where everyone's trying to be inclusive and, you know, open-minded, I would have thought people would have been open to this. I would have thought this would have been a encouraging thing to see. Two young men in touch with their sexuality, seeing each other in public and being like, hey, let's fug. Let's quickly fug through our flipping jorts. Let's quickly fug through this fucking fabric. Come on, man, let's go. I thought that was what people would have done. But instead, people are out here clowning, calling them names, you know, calling them a bunch of sticks, other derogatory words, which obviously I won't repeat on this platform because I'm an ally. But overall, I don't see a problem with this at all. There's been plenty of times when I've bent over some of my friends and given them a couple good poundings. That's what friends bloody do. That's what boys do. If you're like, can you really be boys unless you've seen each other coom? Can you really be boys unless you stared into each other's eyes as you're coming to the point of cooming? Can you really say you're boys until you've seen each other's piece? Can you? Exactly. So big up Justin Bieber and Jaden Smith. On top of that, I really did enjoy Peggy Gou's performance at Coachella. Peggy Gou did a really good job, I'm not going to lie. And this is something that I've always been very staunchly, I would always repeat on my platforms and stuff. As much as I would give her some raggings for being a little bit, you know, going through the motions and being a bit of a robot, not even much, having basically the personality of a cardboard box and shit, you can't deny, as a professional artist, as a professional DJ of the highest level, she has an ability to, like,
turn it on whenever she's performing. She never goes through the motions. She's always like there, present, giving you a fucking barnstorming show. And the show that she did at Coachella was really fucking fun. Number one, the visuals were great. You see here via her Instagram, she had a massive, it was basically, I think her design was all the same for all the stages. It kind of looked like an eye. It was like an eye shape. And that circle thing was where they had the screen. And of course, on the outside was where they had extra lights and shit. So I guess that everyone had the same sort of setup, but it worked really well because the DJ booth as well, doubled up as a screen. So you could project a whole entire image on that circle section of the stage, which was really cool. And then she also had dancers on the stage. The only thing I would say about Peggy Gou's performance, which I was a little bit, a little bit bad taste in the mouth, is the dancers. I feel like Peggy Gou has never really been known as like an LGBTQ plus advocate or ally in any way, shape or form, or really aligned to the gay scene at all. So to see her have like people who identify with that or are in that community on the stage dancing and voguing and shit and whatever, it just felt a bit performative. It felt a little bit yucky, I'm not gonna lie. The stage show was amazing. I loved the graphics on the screen and shit, but the dancers felt very, very performative. It felt like she was kind of using them to appear like she's part of that when she's not really. You know what I mean? Like, she does these massive festivals, these massive big arena shows. She's not really a part of that LGBTQ queer scene at all in the slightest. But whatever, I still think the dancers were amazing. They kept the energy up. They were there on stage shaking their rumpers, giving their all. The graphics and the flipping designs on the stage were really cool, really bright. And that's something I really give her credit to for. I think her style of, her personal style definitely does influence her, how she presents herself on stage. Like, it's way more bright and like lighthearted and fun than most DJs. Most DJ stage shows are super dark, super somber, industrial, stripped down, bare. But Peggy Gou like really goes for it. And I'd imagine, even though she gets paid a lot of money, I'd imagine it's still quite a lot of money to put these shows on. She's still having to invest in like hiring people to do the effects and to do the video and the audio, whatever, and the lighting. So she's probably shelling out a bunch of money to do these type of shows, but it does pay dividends because they're fun to look at visually, you know what I mean? And you get a lot of bang for money. And this is something I have to say, having watched a lot of the DJ shows during Coachella, as much as people in my scene, the underground scene, the techno scene, underground techno, underground house scene, whatever it may be, the underground rave scene, they love to rag on the business techno guys and the EDM guys. But let's be honest. Yes, their ticket prices are crazy. Yes, they're performing all the bait places. But I think these EDM business techno guys, they put on a far better, way more fun show than the quote-unquote underground guys and girls. The underground guys and girls turn up with a pair of Sennheiser HD25s. They turn up with their favorite USB stick and they just plug and go. They don't put any effort into the production of the show. There's no visual part of it. There's no specific lighting, nothing. They don't even have merch for sale, bruh. They just turn up, put on the, play for an hour and then duck out, collect their fee later. At least with these EDM guys and girls, these business techno people, however you're going to describe them, they put on a fucking show. There's pyrotechnics, there's smoke, there's lights, there's drones, there's balloons, there's dancers on the stage. They go fucking nuts. Whole production. And I think that's something you have to give these guys credit for, because you get your money's worth. People that went to go see Peggy Gou, I think, definitely felt like they got their money's worth. So big up her for that. Love the performance. I watched most of it. I've got actually a lot of it recording on my phone. I'm probably going to do a full reaction of it on my Kick. So if you want to check it out, I'll react to it in full on my Kick, which you can find at kick.com/AgostinoZinga. You'll find that link in the description below. Again, I found the whole using of, these type of looking people to be a little bit icky, I'm not gonna lie. And this is something that she's done, I think, in the last few years. Ever since Na 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 came out, she's been trying to position herself more with this type of community thing. And I feel like, it's a little bit icky, but again, does it really matter when you're basically platforming people and you're basically putting them out there on a bigger stage? It serves a purpose and it probably is going to be a beneficial in the end anyway, but I felt it a little bit icky, I'm not gonna lie. But again, who knows, maybe they could be her friends. Either way, Peggy Gou smashed it. Great fucking show. She looked amazing up there. And again, love light and all bright and airiness up there. I fucking loved it. The next thing I loved as well, Lana Del Rey, sublime performance. Her voice sounds exactly like the CD. And number one, forget all that shit, she looked phenomenal. I have a feeling this isn't Ozempic weight loss. I think this is just pure back to basics, tighten up your diet, bang on the exercise, and maybe a couple of bumps on a weekend, right? Maybe a couple of lines on a weekend, whiskey and coke and shit, but tighten up your diet and good exercise regime. Because she looks like she's lost weight the real way. Because if she did Ozempic, she'd look more sickly. She had the droopy face, the hollowed face, whatever. We know what the telltale signs are. But she looks in prime shape, ridiculously good, and ready to go on tour, whatever it may be. And again, just another reminder of just how much of a star and icon that she is. She went through all her hit records and absolutely smashed it on the stage. And if I think in general, considering the pace and the tempo of her songs, I think she did a really good job in terms of captivating and kind of capturing that entire crowd throughout the entire performance. I really fucking enjoyed it. So big up Lana Del Rey. Another person I really enjoyed was Ice Spice. Ice Spice, this might have been the most enthusiastic and the most hype I've ever seen Ice Spice perform. I don't think I've ever seen Ice Spice perform this hype and enthusiastic as she was at Coachella. She's usually quite, you know, she's quite a chill person. Some people would say she's on the spectrum. I wouldn't go that far. But she's pretty laid back, you know, kind of does her own thing and doesn't really go out there and, you know, kind of blast herself, whatever it may be. But I feel like this performance was a real big deal for her. She was like, oh my God, I'm headlining fucking Coachella. So she came with it. Production-wise, the fucking set was... The set design was fucking amazing. Her big head over there, it kind of looked like a graffiti, kind of, you know, like a train thing. Dancers on stage. And she was screaming on the stage, singing her bar. She looked incredible in her outfit. She debuted a lot of new tunes and shit. It was fucking good to see her like this. I'm not going to lie, because literally she's usually kind of boring and kind of shit to kind of watch live. But she was turned up. Ice Spice was turned fucking up. I loved it. So Ice Spice fucking smashed it. I think this bar people are going crazy about was this new song. It says, bitch, you're losing the plot. That's why I got to the top. And no, I don't got any ops. Like, why would I beef with a flop? Who's bigger than she? Who's prettier too? Who's bigger than me? Like, she killed it. Ice Spice fucking killed it. And again, I'm a big fan of her anyway, so I'm going to be a bit, you know, a little bit biased in that regard. But I've also been critical of her performances. They've been kind of lazy. She goes through the motions. There's not really much she's doing. She's just shaking her ass. But this time, she combined it all. She did the whole ass shaking. By the way, when Ice Spice bends over and shakes her ass, the crowd goes mental. So I don't blame her for doing it, because it's such an easy applause break. They go fucking nuts. So big up Ice Spice for it. And I love this POV they did with this wireless camera where the dancers kept like dancing around with a POV. So it made it look like you're watching a fucking porno. But she killed it. Ice Spice fucking killed it. So big up Ice Spice for doing an incredible job and really reminding bitches what the levels were. She fucking killed it. So big up Ice Spice in that regard. Another one who I really loved during Coachella weekend number one was, of course, Tyler, the Creator. Tyler, the Creator is always great, right? There's no denying that Tyler, the Creator is one of the greatest performers of his generation, of his, you know, of his peer group. He brought out loads of great people. He brought out Danny Glover. He brought out Tyler, the Creator. Sorry, A$AP Rocky. But just in general, the stage design, the fucking set list, the bit at the start where he kind of blew out the fucking caravan he was in and the whole skit around it was just incredible. Charlie Wilson coming out on the piano, fucking fantastic. This is a short clip that features Tyler, the Creator and Rocky on stage. But yeah, it looks amazing. Look at that. It looks fucking amazing. Projection, how he looked, fucking shining. I loved everything about it. We continue on with that one. We're going to say Doja Cat also killed it, by the way. Doja Cat looked amazing. She had this incredible outfit on where she was covered in blonde weave, essentially. It kind of reminded me of the iconic flipping Margiela show back in the day. She was just covered in hair from head to toe. She looked absolutely phenomenal. Like, let's not lie. Doja Cat looked absolutely great there on stage, covered in this fucking hair outfit wig thing going on. Absolutely amazing. And just absolutely killed her set. No word of a lie in that regard. She was fucking great. Face card's not declining. Looks fantastic. But when I was watching the performance and her entrance, right, and her just moving around the stage, number one, you were reminded, oh shit, she's a dancer, right? And she's really fucking fit, because this kind of bear walk thing that she does, this bear walk thing that she does is really hard. It's not easy to do. This kind of, it's almost like a bear walk. If you're not fit, you don't have agility, this is really difficult. So the fact that she's doing it so easily is proof that she's incredibly, you know, she's incredibly limber and shit. But the show was incredible, really, really fun show. But it was a reminder of the reason why she's not regarded so highly, even though she's an incredible artist. She's not very likable. And it shouldn't really matter, I think, in music and art. I think people should be able to separate the art from the artist. But I think in Doja Cat's case, one of the reasons why people don't... Because I think if you watch clips of her during a tour this year, or you know, that finished this year anyway, you would have seen her performing amazing, bro. She's really good on stage. Really fucking good live. But she'd never really got much coverage about it. You didn't even see much about it written. Even though I think a lot of the dates were sold out, there wasn't much coverage about it. And I think a lot of it just has to do with how unlikable she comes across on the internet. So I wonder, in Doja Cat's case, if there's a case to be had for, as much as she's really quirky personality-wise, and she, you know, she can be charismatic and really engaging, maybe there's something to be said for just shutting up, Beyonce style, never speaking, and just putting out fucking albums and records. Because that might be the way that she gets highly regarded. Because I think she's got a little bit of like Cardi B, Nicki Minaj syndrome, where sometimes people just can't get past their personality to enjoy the music. I think Nicki Minaj is kind of different because the music catalog is just so, it's so fucking deep. It's impossible not to respect and like her as a musician. But I think Doja Cat is just too young and new in the game to have that kind of level of grace. And she's not probably Kanye level. So people to not, because I think there's probably a level of talent where people don't care about you as a person. If you're a dickhead, you have to be Kanye level of a talent, like a genius level, for people to be like, okay, I can just ignore how much of a dick they are as a person. I can just concentrate on the art. But I don't think Doja's at that level yet, but she's close. So I think maybe if she just completely turns off, you know, talking to her about her fans, turns off talking about the industry, and just focuses on the music, I think she could be all right. But I don't know. I was just reminded of her. So I was like, people don't talk about Doja Cat enough. She's really fucking amazing. But she fucking killed it. Another person that fucking killed it, I really enjoyed, was Lil Yachty. Lil Yachty snapped. Lil Yachty's performance was so good. He had a live, quote-unquote, choir singers on there. He brought out Justin Sky to sing some bits, and he also brought out fucking Mac fucking DeMarco. Mac fucking DeMarco is a special guest. Let me play a little bit of fucking Lil Yachty's set. And he also had a massive boat there. That's this little boat that he was kind of standing and sitting on and shit. It was really cool. He had a cool outfit on as well, all denim with the headband, with the matching fucking shoes, but he smashed it. Live band too, by the way. No backing track, live band only. I fucking loved it. By the way, I've got a feeling as well. I saw more rappers, more hip-hop artists performing without a backing track. Now, what is a backing track? Backing tracks are usually when musicians get on stage and they basically perform over the same track that you have on your MP3 players or your phone, but they just lower the vocals so that they could just scream over them. Personally, for me, coming from an indie band background and coming from going to metal shows and punk shows, I think that's deplorable. I think when you do a live show, you should be doing a live show. You should be doing like all the old school hip hop greats where they were performing, you know, you could hear them fucking breathing into the mic and shit on a fucking instrumental. But nowadays, I think artists are lazy because they only record one version of the record. Whatever version they record, it gets put up on fucking streaming platforms and they make a fucking non-explicit version. But they usually don't keep a version that's stripped. They usually don't keep a stem version of it without the vocals. So it's already done and they can't go back in and take away the fucking vocals because it's already done. So I have to kind of remake it. And it takes too much money to do that. So they'd rather just scream over an MP3. Now, my theory is this. Recently, there was an article that came out that said that hip-hop is no longer the number one music genre. And I also remember seeing a clip of Offset saying that a lot of big hip-hop acts aren't getting booked at the big festivals anymore. Because a lot of the festivals feel like these hip hop acts aren't worth the fees. They don't bring back a lot because the shows they do are bare minimum. They just bring a DJ. They don't really bring a band. There's not much of an experience. So the festivals now, I'm sure some of you have seen it, there's now more of a turning towards booking pop acts and booking bands now. It's kind of become a thing now, like going back into the archives and booking the old bands like Vampire Weekend, or booking newer bands and shit, but more of that instrumentation, so that people, when they're paying their $100 plus for a festival ticket, they feel like they got their money's worth, because they see people on stage who are literally performing the music, as opposed to just a rapper singing over an MP3 that you already have on your phone. So I think it's no surprise to see some of the rappers on stage at Coachella doing what Lil Yachty did and performing without a backing track. Lil Yachty did it even further. He probably invested a lot of money. He probably didn't make that much money from his Coachella set, because he had to build this whole stage. He had fucking singers. He had a girl on keys. He had people on drums, on guitar. So he probably invested a lot into it. But I think this is the way to go forward, because this is a way to kind of make the experience worthwhile. Because I remember once seeing, I think it was Future back in the day, perform at the O2, and it was horrible. He was just screaming over an MP3. And then the next time I saw him, he then started performing like over like a non, you know, without a backing track. So basically the instrumental, and just have the vocals on the chorus to give your voice a break. And that was incredible. And I think that's the bare minimum they could do. Cause you know, you look back at some of the old school greats, you know, Method Man, all these type of dudes back in the day, they'd always perform a cappella. And I think that's the way to go about it. So it's no coincidence that Lil Yachty did it and absolutely killed it. So big up Lil Yachty. But Damon Albarn from fucking Blur didn't get the reaction or reception that he wanted. This entitled old fucking fart was complaining and said that he's never going to come back to Coachella because they weren't singing along to his fucking records. It's like, bruh, how entitled could he be? So this is courtesy of the Telegraph. Blur's Damon Albarn berates silent Coachella audience for not singing. Right? Frontman Blur, Damon Albarn, has berated the fucking Coachella Grand for not singing along to one of his band's hits. The Britpop singer raged at the festival crowd in California as he tried to encourage some audience participation. Again, don't get me wrong, Blur's a legendary band, but you're also expired. You're also dusty old men. You're 56 years old, mate. You're performing in front of Gen X's and Gen Z's, basically, kids. Like, know your fucking audience, play your fucking hits, and keep it moving. You're not gonna, this isn't like an old fogey dance. This isn't you playing a fucking Hyde Park. That you have more reason to be upset about, but relax. Anyway, the Britpop singer raged at the festival crowd in California and tried to encourage him some participation. Albarn grew frustrated with the crowd's silence and said, "You're never seeing us again, so you might as well fucking sing this." What a cunt. That's equivalent to a comedian saying, "Oh yeah, the crowd were really tough. The crowd weren't really engaging." It's like, no, it wasn't the crowd, motherfucker. It was you. You're boring. We don't care about what you have to say. You're fucking shit. Footage has circulated of the awkward silence Blur expressed on stage as he performed 1994 song Girls and Boys. Albarn 56 says, yeah, he should have performed Girls and Boys and Dems. Maybe they would have fucking replied then. Girls and Boys, Days and Dems. That might have actually worked. Albarn 56 sings the lyrics, "Always should be somebody," before holding a mic to the audience and expectation for them to say, "You really love." Obviously, honestly, Damon Albarn needs to be given a fucking head wobble. Does Damon Albarn think any of these kids in his picture know who fucking Blur is? Does he really have that kind of an ego to think any of these kids would know who fucking Blur is? Come on, bruh. These girls look like they're not even over 22. Do you really think they fucking know who Blur is? Come on, man. Come on. What a dickhead. Met with silence, he told the crowd that he will go one more and you could do better than that. Despite the lackluster performance of Girls, Blur's official social media account thanks Coachella for their participation. Girls and Boys was the first single released from Blur 994 single Park Life. Most of these kids weren't even born in 994, they're probably born in 2004. Anyway, the band whose members are our band. Blah, 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 blah. So let's see. He said they're not going to see us again. I guess they're going to turn down the extra fee and not go to Weekend 2, maybe. But it's no loss. We don't really need them. We don't give a fuck. So fuck Blur. One person who did do well and who does sing and who isn't a band is Mac DeMarco. Mac DeMarco came on stage and as a secret guest for fucking Lil Yachty set, and he fucking killed it. Let's play a little clip here of Mac DeMarco killing on stage. Look at him, such a legend, such a legend. Spend some time away. Understand, By the way, Mac DeMarco is also a perfect example of sobriety done the right way, because he got sober and, you know, he doesn't really bleat on about it too much, but he looks incredible now compared to how he used to look. If you're a big fan of fucking Mac DeMarco, you're a big fan of fucking Saturdays, and you like me, you think Saturdays is one of the greatest albums of all time, and you've seen Mac DeMarco perform live, you would have known that he's known for having really wacky live show appearances where he really performs differently from how the song is. You know, he does a unique rendition of the song that you listen to all the time live. And I remember one time I saw him performing, I think he came to London, I forgot what festival it was, and he literally stripped off, basically down to his fucking tighty whities, and was on stage gyrating. This is obviously when he was, you know, still drinking and doing drugs and shit, and I don't know if he was high or whatever, but, you know, he didn't look the way he does now. He's in far better shape. He clearly looks like he's healthy. He clearly looks like he's in a good space, and it's great to see. He's like a real good example of, like, you know, getting sober and not becoming boring, getting sober and not it being your whole personality, and really fucking living it, because he's still able to make amazing music. He's still held in high regard, bloody blah, blah, blah. But there was a part where back in the day where he'd go crazy. Legitimately, I remember he was like on stage just taking off every piece of clothing, every song, until he got down to his tighty white. He's like a legit rock star. So big up Mac DeMarco. I'll take Mac DeMarco over Damon Albarn every fucking single day. Oh, and No Doubt. Killed it, No Doubt. Killed it. Probably, again, the crowd probably didn't know a lot of their songs, but they just went through the fucking hits. Amazing band, great performance, great control of the crowd. Like, just incredible. I got no other words to say about it. I fucking enjoyed the whole entire show. I watched it all weekend. I fucking loved it. So big up them. And then lastly, Skepta. Skepta, Skepta, Skepta. He even quoted me as well. Skepta even fucking quoted me on Twitter for my compliment on the big old Twitter, Big Smoke. Skepta quoted me because he did amazingly well. And why did Skepta do amazingly? Why was Skepta's performance most impressive? Because Skepta's on stage, just him. He's not a very animated, hype guy anyway. He's very laid back, very chill. It's just him and his DJ performing on stage. No theatrics, no real crazy graphics, no big smokes and shit, no pyrotechnics, just crazy on the mic. Great control of his breath, great control of the stage, just destroying. And I personally think that's harder to do than somebody that could dance, somebody that's got a bit of a gimmick and shit. Just to stand on stage and just go through your hit records is really hard. And he did it spectacularly well, even more so because he's an English act. He's a UK act. I feel like UK acts have a hard time breaking into the US. You guys over there, the same way that we kind of laugh at your accent, I think you guys don't take us seriously with our accent, especially when we're rapping. You kind of just look at us like we're corny. So the fact that he's able to command the stage and hold the attention of the US audience says a lot about him and his level of artistry is at the moment. And I fucking loved every part of it. Really strong performance. Again, I'll probably do a full reaction to this on my Kick. So definitely sign up to my Kick on kick.com/AgostinoZinga. I'll definitely do a live reaction on there of the whole thing, because I recorded it on my phone. I've got to upload it, because if I upload it on YouTube, it's going to get fucking copyright claimed. But if you want to see a live reaction of me reacting to Skepta's performance at Coachella, sign up to my Kick, and that'll be happening in the next couple of days. But big up Skepta, absolutely killed it. Absolutely fucking killed it. Moving on. Let's hit some streetwear news. Number one news we have to talk about. This is hot off the press. Jean Paul Gaultier is collaborating with Shane Oliver of Hood by Air fame for a capsule collection launching on the same day as a Met Gala, May 6th. No details so far, apart from this one t-shirt that says GLTR. I guess that's Gaultier Sportswear. But wow, what an incredible collaboration. I'm so excited to see what they're going to put together. Shane Oliver has been smashing it lately with his, I forgot the project he does. I think it's called the Anonymous Club or something. Obviously, most of you know him from Hood by Air fame. And, you know, combining it with Jean Paul Gaultier at the moment is going to be fucking amazing. I honestly cannot wait to see what we see from these guys. So I'm really, really excited to see when it drops. I'm assuming we're going to get, from this picture that we already got available, I'm assuming it's going to be t-shirts and sportswear. I'm assuming. So t-shirts, hoodies, long sleeves, maybe some hats, some bags. I'm curious to see if they do any shoes. Will we get some boots? Like, oh, I'm really excited. I can't wait to see it. So courtesy of Hypebeast, it says Jean Paul Gaultier's renowned eponymous label has linked up with a variety of guest talents over the years, including lens like Glenn Martin, so obviously from Diesel, Oliver Roestein, obviously from Balmain, Haider Ackermann of Haider Ackermann fame, Simon Rocha, as well as other guests. Alongside them, JPG has also tapped brands like White Project and Knowles to a Ready to Wear collaboration. Now Ready to Wear collaboration catalogue is adding another star at the announcement of the forthcoming collab or capsule with Shane Oliver. The Hood Bayer co-founder, Anonymous Club founder, has been known for his provocative approach to fashion, retaining a cult-like following. Now Design's talents will be heading to Jean-Paul Gaultier with a special ready-to-wear capsule collaboration dubbed GLTR Sportswear. I can't wait for that, bro. Gaultier Sportswear, are you dumb? Spanning about 50 pieces, the wardrobe looks to ways in which Gaultier has put his stamp on the fashion in the 1990s, with inspiration looking at Oliver's own experience. The capsule is sure to reveal a few elements of streetwear and high fashion. I didn't want the collection to be about swaggifying something highbrow. It felt more organic for me to critique the things I find important in modern wardrobe and amplify it, says Oliver, told Business of Fashion. There was a lot of common ground there. That's such a great quote, isn't it? I didn't want to swaggify something highbrow. That's what everyone basically does now. So he didn't go for the easy option. He just wanted to take what's already there or take a modern wardrobe and kind of sprinkle it with some Gaultier pizzazz. The forthcoming Jean-Paul Gaultier and Shane Oliver collaboration to be released in New York on May 6th, the same day as the Met Gala. Stay tuned for collaboration. Yeah, I can't wait to see it. I'm really anxious to see what that looks like. I cannot wait to see what they do going forward. It should be fucking fun. It should be absolutely fun and fantastic. Moving on from that, we got some news courtesy of one of my favorite brands in the world, Denim Tears. This actually is one of the best collaborations I feel like they've done in a while, or one of the best things they've done in a long, long time. And it's a collaboration between Denim Tears and Comme des Garçons wallets. I would have preferred to see Comme des Garçons shirt as well, because I feel like the flag, the colors that Denim Tears use could work really well in those button-ups they do, you know, under the Comme des Garçons shirt, you know, brand, which is one of the brands that I've loved, and I've got a lot of their pieces actually in our wardrobe. I don't have a lot of Comme des Garçons Homme, you know, the main ready-to-wear shit, but some of the, I guess it's kind of like a diffusion line. It's mostly aimed at kids, whatever. It's a youth brand, but that brand, where it's just mostly shirts, I feel like they would work really well with Denim Tears, but maybe in the future. Anyway, with that being said, they've got a collaboration together with Comme des Garçons. Modeling it is A$AP Nast of obviously A$AP Mob fame, who's now turned into a full-blown fashion influencer style type of guy. So obviously him modeling it is a big deal, but obviously he makes it look cool as well, because kids like him and all that good shit. So you've got this massive coin, I guess, what wallet, purse you're gonna call it, with the reggae flag, with the reggae Britain flag on it. I've got the actual name of it, it's kind of escaped me at the moment. But my favorite piece from this collection, I'm not going to lie, is this smaller wallet here, number one. This smaller wallet here with the Union Jack on it. And again, this pineapple wallet. This pineapple wallet is fucking fantastic. Like, I would rock that in an instant. I would also would like to have seen, I've said it before, I would like to have seen him go full blown with this collaboration and also do like a Hot Wings shaped coin purse. Like, imagine if he did like a hot wing. Imagine like a chicken wing. But then you do it in the shape of a coin purse, so like a fried chicken wing, right? So let's say fried chicken wing. Again, the people on the internet would not have been happy about it, but I think it would have worked really well. So imagine you get an actual chicken wing and you actually made that into a shape of a coin purse. I think that'd look incredible. Like this type of shape, right? That type of shape. This type of like weird triangle shape, and you did it into a coin purse. Let's see if that actually exists. Can we see that? Chicken wing coin purse. I think that would have worked really fucking well as a little collaboration to add to this. Yeah, see, you got some things here. You got, let's see, you got chicken wing key rings and shit. I think that would have worked really well as a little coin purse on top. But, you know, maybe he didn't want to go too far because people are already getting pissed off that he's doing these racial stereotype things with the watermelon. To be fair, if you're black and you're being offended that he's using a watermelon print on the wallet, it says more about you, because it's kind of like you're reducing us to watermelons, right? And chicken and okra and shit. Like, as if that's the entirety of the black fucking experience is fucking okra, watermelon, chicken, all that malarkey. But regardless, all that shit aside, as products themselves, I think they're fucking cool. I love everything about them. They're due to drop on Friday, April 19th on denimtears.com. Africa Diaspora Goods. I guess that's what the store is called. And they're also meant to be dropping at Dover Street Market, New York, Los Angeles, London, and Ginza as well. So big up them. Dexter Navy on the photography. ASAP Nas modeling it. I love everything about it. I love everything about that shit. Can't wait to see it. And again, I don't know if the rest of it is also part of the Denim Tears collaboration. I wonder if this shirt is part of it. I wonder if this jacket he's wearing, the leather jacket, looks fucking hard. I wonder if this is also part of the collaboration. I'm not too sure. And I'm also wondering if these pants are also part of it. I don't know if they are. On ASAP Nas thing, ASAP Nas is kind of starting to look a little bit like Fearless London, isn't it? And not in a good way. So I hope he's okay. Because Fearless London went through a bit of a weird spell where he was, you know, doing a bit too much partying. So Nas is looking a little bit too Fearless London-y in the face for me. So hopefully he's fine. Hopefully this is just what he looks like. Maybe it's just the hair is kind of putting me off. But, you know, Godspeed to that man. Godspeed to that young man. Godspeed to that young man. Moving on, we've also got this great collaboration courtesy of Pata. Pata have collaborated with Nike for their Pata Running Club collection. Fucking hard. It features the varsity jacket that obviously some of you have seen Peggy Goo wear. I think she had it on her Instagram here, actually. Let me show you for those of you who haven't seen it. Peggy Goo actually had this amazing varsity jacket that I fucking want. That was fucking amazing. This varsity jacket here. Also, LeBron James was featured wearing it too. This varsity jacket is so fucking hard. Pata don't flop when it comes to these varsity jackets, right? It's got this black body, white sleeves, yellow, you know, accoutrements all over the place. Massive, great fucking logos everywhere. And this is part of their running club collection fucking thing, right, going on. And it looks so fucking hard. So this is Nike and Pata running team collection. We'll take it to a finishing line. You've got some great, a really expansive collection with Huaraches in there, jackets, hoodies, you know, sweatpants and shit, like fucking incredible, really fucking well done. And I think these colorways of the Huarache Plus is actually an OG. It's actually a flip up an OG. This exact white pink one, it's really fucking nice. So again, very unexpected model, a model I don't think that's been retroed in a while. I don't think they've retroed Huaraches in a while, Huarache Pluses. So it's actually quite a good little flip. So it says here, Nike and Pata share their storied history and the others in the game while removed. For the next venture, Pata and Nike are preparing for a marathon season across the performance heavy running collection. The capsule range celebrates joint communities, fast paced accomplishments. The Pata running team is built on shared activities. The unisex collection includes three previously teased Air Huarache colorways, hybridized with Air Plus uppers and Pegasus soles. The crossbreed sneaker boasts a leather and mesh construction. You know what's funny? There was a period in time where I went to, I think, one Run Them Crew thing. It's cool to see they're still going on. I thought the running club thing kind of died, but I was never a fan of running clubs. Like, that was a thing in streetwear a few years ago that started. Everyone was kind of like making streetwear running clubs, and I fucking hate that shit. I want my separation. When I'm enjoying fashion, I want to enjoy my fashion crowd. When I'm enjoying street, I want to enjoy my streetwear crowd. I don't want to mix them. I don't want to go to like a fashion CrossFit class. You know what I mean? So that's why. But in general, also, I'm not the best person to speak about these things because I hate group activities. So, you know, I went to, I think, a Run Them Crew thing once. And, you know, all the fucking people, there was a DJ there, people talking while they were running and swapping Instagrams. It's like, fuck this, bro. I want to run. I'm here to fucking sweat. I'm here to get a good fucking PR on my mile time. I'm here to shave some minutes off my fucking 5K. I'm not here to fucking pontificate and share and network. Like, that's fucking lame. But some people love it. And this Pata Running Crew has been happening, I think, probably about the same time that Run Them Crew started, or maybe even earlier, but they're still going strong. So I guess, you know, people do love it, but I hate group activities. But the one thing to happen, one of the good things to come from this is obviously the clothes, right? The clothes are great because, you know, these teams usually have good link ups with the brands and shit, and they get together and they make these incredible things. Like, this varsity is so hard. Like, I'd wear this in an instant. And again, I'm not really the biggest fan of like Nike branded varsity jackets. They seem sometimes a little bit too in your face, but I love this. These patches are fucking great. Massive. I don't know if it's like a black tiger or that's like a leopard. I don't know what that is. I thought with this X with the swoosh on it. Looks fucking great. Great construction. The tracksuit is really fucking beautiful too. You got Pata and Nike on the seams here in the yellow, and then obviously that creamy colorway. Like, fucking hell, it looks so fucking good. All of it looks really fucking good. I love it. Love all of it. I'd wear the whole entire thing. And I think it's all... I think the best colorway, obviously, the Huarache is this white and pink one. The black colorway is okay. The black and gray one, not too bad. But I think the best colorway definitely is that white and pink. That white and pink is fucking smoking, and also this Yellow and Blue. Yellow and Blue is also one of two of the best ones on there. But that Varsity is definitely the winner. The Varsity looks good on fucking everybody. It's a little bit oversized in terms of the shape, but I do fucking like it. Let's see the release date. It says here, take a closer look at the Nike and Rocky collection and gallery above. It's set to drop on Pata April 26th and May 2nd through Nike. And the pink Rocky colorways are being... Oh, the pink one's a Pata exclusive. No wonder. The one I like the most is a Pata exclusive, this one. Lame. So I guess the only ones you can get are the yellow and the black ones are going to be available as a GR. But the pink ones are Pata exclusive. That's annoying. They're really nice though. Really fucking nice. I expect them to sell out too. So big up Pata. Big up fucking Pata. Okay, big up Pata. Next on the list. Let's move on here. Before I have to end. We also have news regarding Wurpeltool Club. You know the club that I was speaking about called Open Ground opened up in this place called Wurpeltool, which is near Cologne over there in Germany. It's a new actual club that I want to go to. I think it opened in December of last year, so it's fairly new. But a lot of people have been saying it has the best sound system of all clubs in Europe right now. And a lot of the people that have been saying this are people that I trust online and people that I just know from the scene who have been giving this place rave reviews. And because Berlin is, you know, it's kind of expensive to go to Berlin, as much as I would love to go there as often as I did in the past, because I was, you know, as you guys know, on this particular pod, I talk enthusiastically about Berlin and Berghain all the time, because I go there literally, you know, four times a year. But these times, I don't know, last time I went there was probably like last year, and this is a long time for me, mostly because it's so expensive. The flights are not too bad, but just the accommodation nowadays, like to get like your own place, because usually I don't like to rent a room because, you know, I'm way too grown to be doing that. And it feels uncomfortable to be in somebody's house when you're going to be raving and coming in all hours of the night. I just feel a bit odd to be coming into somebody's home at like 4 a.m. and creeping around with drinks. It's just dumb. So I prefer just to rent the whole apartment out. But to rent a whole apartment out for the weekend in Berlin is now like 400 euros plus. In the past, it was like 150 to 250 max. Now it's like 400 euros, which is like, come on, bro. That's like half of my rent. Do you know what I mean? I'm not paying half of rent to go and fucking for a weekend somewhere else. It's fucking dumb. So this place called Open Ground in the city of Wurpeltool in Germany is now looking like a new place to go to because it's a bit more cost effective. And obviously the flights are fairly the same as Berlin, about 100 euros, whatever, if you book it ahead of time. And Airbnbs for the weekend for yourself, even in the city center, like maximum 200 euros, which is definitely what I can do. So I'm looking forward to going soon. So this is really good news. It says that Wurpeltool Club open air reveals first for residents. So they've only just opened and they've already got their resident program on the desk. I would really hope that a lot of UK clubs do this, but they don't. This is the way that DJs like myself, up and coming ones, get a chance to play at big clubs because they have an resident DJ roster. And what resident DJ roster is meant to do is meant to be like, hey, every weekend, you know, these four DJs play from Thursday to Sunday. And then they pepper it with guests. But what it does is that it gives the resident DJs a chance to play in front of a captive audience because the people coming are usually coming for the guests, but they also know that you're going to be there and you're going to play a particular standard. And then that helps to build you up, gets you to play in front of a crowd. And then later on, you can then become, you know, a bit of a fucking star in your own regard. So it's really important. But, you know, some venues don't do it, whatever. So Germany and other places in Europe still have that as a thing. This is why DJs are thriving over there. And people here are still fucking struggling to fucking kill 1 hour sets. Anyway, it continues. Wurpeltool Club Open Ground has announced its first ever residence. The venue broke the news on Instagram last Friday, April 12th, confirming Josie Rebel, Fadi Mohem, Elk and Tasha for residencies. The four DJs embody the spirit of the club. We invite you to join them with an open mind and share the great experience of the sound system in an inclusive venue. I'm really happy about it, mostly because Josie Rebel, she's a UK fucking legend, one of the best DJs we have here. Definitely an amazing export. She's played a bunch of times at Berghain, really underrated, I think. Very under the radar in terms of a sick DJ, so she's fucking incredible. So glad to see her get the role there. Fadi Hohm, I'm a big fan of, and Tasha I've seen play once, I think, at a festival. But of course, really good people. Open Ground has also, alongside the residents, Open Ground has also booked the likes of Miss Yee, Zenka Brothers, Ski Mask, Ben UFO, Malunke and D-Bridge for the coming weeks. Occupying the converted bunker close to the city's main train station, Open Ground was launched last December by a team centering around the former Hard Wack staff Marcus Riedel. So yeah, those are the new residents there. You love to see it. Good man of like a good man of diversity and inclusivity, if that matters or anything. It doesn't really, to be honest, but if it does matter, it's cool to see. In Fadi Moham's case, I think he got announced as like Bergen resident recently, and now you're also resident of Open Ground. I'm not sure how that works. Can you be resident of two places at the same time? I think you can. Who knows? Regardless, great to see. Love it. And I'm eager to go and check these guys out when they do eventually play. Maybe I will go end of May. If Jez Rebel is playing end of May, maybe that's when I'll go. Maybe I'll check out Open Ground the end of May. Maybe that's when I'll check it out and see her playing there. And then maybe I'll also go back when Fadi Moham plays. Maybe, why not? Why not do both double? So that's definitely somewhere I'm looking forward to checking out. Big up Open Ground. Can't wait to check out the club. Can't wait to fucking check out the fucking club. So to actually end it, I want to play this video, which is courtesy of this channel called Hog. They did a really cool like expose on Berghain and the building itself. It's really fucking cool. I've seen a lot of people fucking talk about it, so I really want to check it out and kind of, you know, see what this whole thing is saying, because this might be a cool little thing to see in terms of some of the stuff that I want to check out here on this fucking channel. So let's check this out, actually. This is courtesy of the channel called Hog. It's called What's Inside the World's Most Exclusive Club. It's a pretty cool video, it looks like, by the sounds of it. It's already got over 700,000 views, so clearly I'm not the only one that's that infatuated with Berghain. So if you want more information and insight of what Berghain's about, definitely check this out. The blurb says, this is a video on the design of Berghain. Thank you, Andreas, for your help and modeling it. So let's see what this says, and maybe this might bring back some memories of my time hanging out in Berghain, all the fun times I've had there over the last few years. Let's see Wagwan. Let's see Wagwan.
Any desk. In Berlin, there is a building. A building few enter, but many try. It is the hardest club to access on the planet.
Yes, it is.
Hundreds of people are rejected in a night.
You know what's funny? I've only been rejected once in my whole entire time of going Berghain. This is many, many, many years. I'm not going to tell you the exact day I started going there because it will date me. But many years of going to Berghain, I've only been rejected once. And the one time I got rejected is when I went with the lads. When I was with the lads, long time I got rejected. When I was really fucked with all the lads and we got all rejected. And for some reason, we were so fucked up, we thought it would be smart if we went around the corner and just swapped jackets. You hear that? We all got rejected. All of us British lads, all of us London guys, super loud, super boisterous, super annoying. We obviously got rejected. Not tonight, right? We get a not tonight. We go around the corner and we think of a great idea of swapping jackets and then going back. The guy was like, obviously I remember who you like. What? Like... No, it was fucking hilarious. But yeah, that's the only time I got rejected. Every time I've been there, I've always been lucky enough to get in. So thank you for the Berghain gods, and may it long continue.
No one, except those lucky enough to get in, knows what it looks like on the inside. That is, until now. I will show you what is inside the world's most notorious nightclub.
So cool.
I'll show you.
Most Berghainers hate this sort of stuff, though. There's some purists out there that hate people talking about the inside of the club, and it's like, come on, get over yourself. Like, it's already very well looked after by the community, considering the scale of it, considering how big it is, considering the amount of people that go through their doors, considering the amount of business they do. It's pretty impressive how they've been able to keep it close to its underground roots. It's impossible to keep it underground because it's the most famous club in the world, but the fact that it's still fairly, you know, under wraps, is still, you know, no photos, people. And, you know, the first time I ever went to Berghain, I remember being on the dance floor and basically being told off by somebody not to do drugs on the dance floor, being told, no, you don't do that here, that's something we do, because, you know, London, UK vibes, you just do anything on the dance floor, quick bump, quick pill, whatever. And that was the first time, okay, shit, it's not the way they do things here. And then you start to learn more, do your research, watch your documentaries. But they do a good job at keeping under wraps, but some fans are like really against this sort of stuff, so I'm curious to see what they think of this documentary or this little clip.
What's inside Berghain? Sophie is a 23-year-old German who grew up in Bavaria. She doesn't speak to her mother, but she does stay in contact with her Volkswagen employed father. A year ago, she moved to Berlin to pursue a career as an artist.
Oh yeah.
She works mostly at cafes though. Her backpack is filled with multiple outfits. Some who get into Berghain stay for days. For Sophie, her bag is a tool, a signal to the strictest bouncers in the world that she's no amateur. It's cold in her fishnets. The line starts to move. In 1949, Berlin was separated by ideology between East and West. Their visions on urban planning divided, too. The Second World War destroyed homes. New ones had to be built, and both sides wanted to flex.
I speak, of course, of West Berlin, a huge, vibrant city with its great main road, comparable in breadth and luxury of its stores to our Champs-Élysées.
In the West, the center became the Breitscheidplatz, the Kurfürstendamm, its most attractive boulevard.
Shops where you can find everything, cafes, restaurants that are always full, and especially at night.
In the East, it became Alexanderplatz, and right next to it, the East German elites planned the construction of a grand new socialist boulevard, the Stalin Allee.
The Stalin Allee is the Grundstein des Aufbaus zum Sozialismus in der Hauptstadt Deutschlands, Berlin.
The first socialist street in East Germany. It would increase the amount of homes and try to advertise the strength of socialism through concrete and mortar. It also created Berghain.
Regel 1. Die Stadt als Siedlungsform ist nicht zufällig entstanden.
In the 1950s, the DDR adopts the 16 principles of urban design. A lesson on urban planning from a Russian parent to a German child.
Das Ziel des Städtebaus ist die harmonische Befriedigung des menschlichen Anspruchs auf Arbeit, Wohnung, Kultur und Erholung.
The Soviets said that organized housing blocks should be built first. So the East Germans did. They built 6 to 7 story tall buildings with restaurants, movie theaters, and other amenities. This was a time when the refrigerator was a symbol for luxury. The apartments in Stalin Allee had space built for them.
Regel 7. Bei Städten, die an einem Fluss liegen, ist eine der Hauptadern und die architektonische Achse der Fluss mit seinen Uferstraßen.
The Soviets said to build parallel next to water. The Stalin Allee was.
Die vielgeschossige Bauweise ist wirtschaftlicher als die ein- oder zweigeschossige. Sie entspricht auch dem Charakter der Großstadt.
The boulevard was built with public transportation, modern amenities, and with restaurants and worker buildings. But the Stalin Allee needed one more thing to complete it. A plant to power it. In 1953, the DDR constructs a heating plant.
One of the amazing things about Berghain is that this building's been around, obviously, since forever. And they haven't never knocked it down. It's now become it's a cultural heritage thing. It's protected by loads of, you know, amazing things. So it's never going to go anywhere anytime soon. But in London, that's prime real estate. That would be turned into like another soulless co-working space made out of fucking glass and metal with shitty cafe shops around it and whatnot. And big fucking chairs with fucking donuts on their fucking Apple laptops looking at their emails all day. So the fact that this building just exists is already a testament to how unique and one-off that city is, because I don't think that would exist in any other city in Europe where such a prime real estate would be just given to a nightclub to do what they want. It doesn't exist.
Sophie is closer. She's at a point in the line where her vibe of depressed art student will be vital in getting her in.
Yeah, man.
If she even gives off the slightest hint that her father sends her more than 1,000 euros each month, her chances will be ruined.
This queue, honestly, is so funny. If you've ever been to Berghain, you know. When you're at the end of the queue, it's really chatty. People are sharing cigarettes, maybe sharing some drogas, some drinks. People are, you know, saying, hey, do you want anything? And they'll go to the fucking thing and buy a drink there if you want something. People are talking, sharing rave experiences, rave stories, war stories. The moment you get close to the barriers, suddenly everybody collectively goes quiet. You all start like playing it cool, like you don't really want to be there, you know. You just happen to be in the area, so you just join the queue, whatever, you don't really care. You make eye contact with the bouncers, or you don't. Or sometimes what people would do silently in your head, you start to judge who's getting in and who's not getting in. You're like, oh shit, he got in, or he didn't get in, and he looks way cooler than me. You start getting nervous, you're like, fuck, oh, those group of girls didn't get in either, and they're super cool. And you start thinking, he's even worried. And suddenly you're like, oh, and then I think what happens, the closer you get to the door, you start to realize, okay, There's no pattern to this. It's just random. There is no like figuring out why they got in, why they didn't get in. It's just luck. So you just let it go. You get to the front, let the guy look at you, and then you hope that they wave you inside. You hope. You hope. Sometimes you can be lucky and they can ask you, hey, do you know who's playing? And then if you're smart and you did your research, you'll know, you'll name some people. I think the only time that I got grilled is when one time they said, oh, have you been here before? I said, yeah, I've been here before. And I said, yeah, I was here last for the Sylvester in July. And you know how desperate I was. This is something I'm only going to admit on here. I won't ever admit it anywhere else. I'll admit it here to you guys in secret. One time I got asked when I got to the burger in front door, hey, do you know who's playing tonight? I was like, yeah. You've been here before? I was like, yeah. And then I mentioned when I've been here before without them asking me. I offered it up. I was like, yeah, I was here at the Sylvester. And as I was saying it, I took out my phone and I had the picture saved that I took of the wristband. When I got back to my Airbnb, I was like drunk and I took a picture of my wristband, like to be cool. I then had it saved in my favorites album on my iPhone. I got it and I up students showed it straight away, like, yeah, look, see, I've been here before. So corny, so lame, so cringe, but guess what? I got in. So it doesn't matter, you know? It doesn't matter.
Right in front of her is a group of loud British men equipped with puffy North Face jackets and piles of makeup that happen to come with a British girl attached.
Oh yeah, that's when sometimes one of the sad things about Berghain though. Sometimes you're in a queue and you bump into a group of people and you know they're not going to get in, but you don't have the guts. It's not really your place and you feel awkward to kind of say to them, hey, you better just leave. Especially if you're waiting for a long time. You're like, you know what? You might as well go somewhere else. You're not going to get in, but you don't want to say it. So you just leave it. It's really sad, especially if they're in front of you. You're like, oh man, I know you're definitely not going to get in. But there's been some times where I've been in a queue with people who I thought would never get in. And I see them in a club. I'm like, shit, how the fuck did you get in? You are fucked. You were like swaying, you were sleeping on the floor. Like, how the fuck did you get in? So it's just luck sometimes. It's just luck. I think if I'm being critical of Berghain for 1 second, which I don't ever do because I fucking love the place, but if I'm being critical of it, I'd say one thing I think they should do is that maybe they should do, especially when it's really busy, if it's like a special event, if it's like a public holiday, if it's like an Easter thing, if it's like a fucking New Year's Day thing, whatever else, right? When obviously all the tourists come. I think it'll be beneficial if they had some, because they used to do this in the past. I remember in the past, one time I went to Berghain when it was really busy. I think it was like a special event and I was waiting in the queue for like 4+ hours and shit. They would come down the queue and just say, no, 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 maybe. You know what I mean? They would just tell you to go before you even got to the door. So you wouldn't waste your time. And I think they should do that more often. Like, instead of just making you queue for 4 hours and then you get to the front and you don't get in, at least give people who are never going to get in the chance to just go and do something else and not waste their time. But, you know, it's not really a waste of time because it's all an experience in itself. Do you know what I mean? Meeting people, seeing the people coming in and out. And because it's a 24-hour plus city, it's not as if you're wasting your time because the other clubs are not going to close soon. Do you know what I mean? They're still going to close on Monday anyway. So maybe it's a to and fro and, you know, whatever. Who knows?
Good, Sophie thinks to herself. The Brits will be rejected.
Yeah, Koila asks, is there a walker? How early do you get in line? It depends. People have there's two schools of thoughts here about early. Because Berghain officially is open from Saturday night all the way to Monday morning. That's when it's officially open, the whole building. So there's a school of thought that says you shouldn't go at Saturday night. You should either go at Saturday night when it opens at 11 p.m. or I think 12, right? Close to about 11:55 p.m. it opens. You should either queue up really early and see if you can get in the early flow and sneak in that way. Or the suggestion that you should come early in the morning on Saturday morning. So you should come between the hours of like 6 a.m. and 9 a.m. Or you should come in the afternoon on the hours of 4 p.m. and 6 p.m. So you can kind of miss the circle. Basically, what you want to do, you want to avoid all of the rush of people leaving other clubs at like, you know, 6 in the morning to get there. You want to kind of miss that gap because there's usually a gap in the middle where it's usually kind of empty. There's no queue. And then usually that time when they kind of change bouncers, there's a possibility you could probably get in easier that way. So that's usually the time. And, you know, you could always, I think the best way to do it is also to check out that Instagram account, which is Berghain Live. And I think the Reddit, the Berghain community Reddit is the best place because they're always updating people and saying, oh yeah, the queue is this long. And obviously there's loads of Telegram groups too. Just search on Telegram. You'll be able to find Telegram groups of people. I think the main one that I'm on is like Berghain Music Lovers or something. And they always kind of update you on the queue times. But the queue times, I think, is best to go really early in the morning or really early in the afternoon. Those are the best times to go because usually people are like in bed or something. So usually the best time to go then.
in an instant. The bouncers will be more likely to accept a familiar German after. When the Berlin Wall fell, East Berlin became a shell.
There isn't a walk of shame. Because it's so hard to get into, I don't think anybody feels bad if they don't get in. It's just annoying, you waste your time. I don't think it's like a shame thing. It's just like you really wanted to go. Like you're out there, you can hear the music from the outside, you see all these cool people coming in and out. You might see the DJ you want to see come in with their record bags. So it's just frustrating that you don't get in. I don't think it's a walk of shame. You just, you know, it kind of is what it is. And usually, I don't know about other people, but I know with me, even though I've got in all the time that I've got there by myself, I think even when I go by myself, I always have like backup plans. I'm like, okay, if I don't get in, I know exactly where I'm going to go next. So it's not like you're like, oh my God, this is my only place I want to go. You've always got second, third plans, you know, that you want to kind of go to next. And because it's kind of in the center anyway, easy, you know, train, you know, they're not super close, like 5 minute walks, but, you know, good connections to fucking trains and shit. You can go.
The leftover buildings in the east became abandoned breeding grounds for techno.
Where people took empty rooms and played in them and then left them again at some point. A kind of squatter ethos. And that also applied to Osgood, which was a factory building in the middle of nowhere. Look at the original signage of Berghain.
That's Berlin's most
important. Panorama bar, Osgood, laboratory, Berlin Friedrichshain. What's that say? Music kun tag lag tong. Honestly, German language is a fucking nightmare to fucking try and learn. Look how long that. What does that even mean? Does that mean like music center or something? Music kun ter hautung. Like fucking hell. So many words.
Important gay club, run by Michael Tufel and Norbert Dormann. It was a place for a different type of
early
protection and different types of behavior. But in 2003, it had to close.
Mm-hmm.
The city had set its sights on a brand new stadium. Osgood's owners had to find a new, empty building. Sophie can see the bouncer. The Brits are the only thing standing between her and entering Berghain.
This is a nervous place.
In front of them
so
is a man
nervous.
Named Sven. Not someone you'd want to argue with. Tonight, he'll have to fight the fragile male British ego.
You know what's funny? Sven is actually the nicest bouncer. He's actually the nicest. He actually gives people a chance. He'll talk to people like... There's other bouncers at Berghain who are way more ruthless and cutthroat with their nose, and it seems like they take like, you know, they take pride in telling you to fuck off.
No.
Sven is actually... Sven, despite what he looks like,
hey, all right,
with the tattoos all over his face, Sven's actually way nicer.
Mate, guten Tag, mein Friend.
Heute nicht.
James, what does he mean?
Heute nicht.
Mate, are you taking Mickey? We've been waiting out here for fucking hours.
Does he mean we should come back at night?
The British men were pulled away by two bouncers. Sophie became excited.
I've never seen it happen, by the way. When people get turned away, they usually just leave. I've never seen people argue and fight, usually. The only people I've seen actually fight and argue are the girls. Usually, it's oddly odd to say this, right? But it's usually Russian girls or Ukrainian girls, like especially the rich ones. They'll come in there and they'll start recording inside a club. And obviously, you're not allowed to do that. It's like a zero tolerance policy with recording in there. They cover your phone. They tell you you can't record in there. If you get caught recording, you get chucked out straight away. And I've seen, you know, Russian girls especially. They just argue. Oh my God, I paid money. I didn't know. Why can't this my social media? It's like, how do you not know this is the one of the main rules of this place? Like, have you done no research? It's pretty funny, to be fair. That happens. You see them all the time. Big up my Russian and Ukrainian itches out there who don't give a fuck about rules.
Too excited. She composed herself and made herself think about the banality of existence, and then about how her thinking about that made her edgy and cool, producing the perfect combination of facial muscles that could get her into the club. It was her turn now. Sven was in front of her. Sven began working for Osgood. The strict door policy he helps administer is not just a marketing tactic, it's necessary.
I have a responsibility to make Berghain a safe place for people who come purely to enjoy the music and celebrate.
To keep people away from the prying eyes of adults who were once kids that told on others in elementary school, Sven protects those who would be told on.
See, he looks really menacing, right? He's got these cool piercings on his lips and this cool horned septum and these big rings and his ears and plugs and tattoos all over his face. He looks menacing. I think the tattoos are like barbed wire. But I swear to God, he's the nicest bouncer. The other ones are the ones to watch out for. The other ones are the ones that are like harder to get in with. They're really harsh. Sven's actually, he actually might ask you, hey, who are you here to see? He might ask you some, like, whatever. He was just like, you know, he'd be a bit more personable. It's the other ones you have to watch out for. That's what I like about that place. Like, it's the ones you don't expect are the harshest. So be in your P's and Q's. But Sven's actually quite nice.
Der Club hat sich aus der Berliner Schwulenszene der 90er Jahre entwickelt. Es ist mir wichtig, etwas von diesem Erbe zu bewahren, dass es sich immer noch wie ein einladender Ort für die ursprünglichen Clubbesucher anfühlt.
To get through Sven and his team of bouncers, there are many unspoken rules.
Oh yeah, that's the logo that's on the book as well. What's that book? I swear I've got it still. It's like the EasyJet. I think it's a book about techno tourism. I read it ages ago. I think it's like EasyJet Techno or something. I forgot what it's called. Is it EasyJet Techno? Let's see if I can find it. It's a book by this writer that wrote about obviously the boom people going around and fucking doing the techno tourism shit that I did. But if you know, you know.
People think you should follow. Be in a small group. Wear black. Look bored and somewhat indifferent. Do not speak. And if spoken to, speak German.
Look bored.
But these rules...
By the way, I don't speak German and I don't always wear black when I go in there and I get in. So some of these rules are dumb. You just got to, like, you know, you just got to try your luck, really. It's not anything. Just kind of... I think you're better off being yourself. I see people go there with fucking harnesses on, with their nails painted, with makeup on their face. Clearly, it's not what they do in their regular life. And they look clearly like they're wearing a uniform or an outfit or a costume. It doesn't look congruent to who they are whatsoever. And you could smell them. You could see them from a mile away. So you're better off just wearing what you'd regularly wear in your own city to go and party and just try your luck. But the idea of like wearing a particular guy, it's not, you're talking, okay, no, it doesn't guarantee, like, I've worn all white there. I've worn color. Like, it doesn't matter, man. You just, whatever. It's just luck thing. And by the way, the book itself, if you're wondering, is called Lost and Sound. It's called Lost and Sound by a guy called Tobias Rapp. I've actually got it somewhere here, actually. I read it back in the day. It's a really good one. The blurb is, almost everyone in the world knows someone who has been to German capital and proudly returned with bizarre stories of the previously unimagined highs of the endless techno parties in Berghain, Watergate or Tresor. All these stories contain a grain of truth, but many questions remain unanswered. Why is it thousands of clubbing tourists land in Berlin Schönefeld Airport every weekend? Why have the clubs in Berghain come to become stuff of legends? And why have some of the best known producers and techno DJs like Richie Hilton and DJ Hell moved with their labels to the city? These are the kind of questions explored in Lost in Sound by Tobias Rapp, a German journalist, music journalist who's been living and working in Berlin since the 90s, has spoken with DJs and clubbers and labels and hotel managers and urban planners. He has looked at, listened carefully. So check it out. It's a really good book, Lost in Sound. It's quintessential for those of you who are into this whole techno tourism, nightlife, dance scene, techno shit that I'm into. Check it out. It's a really good book.
Really aren't that black and white. Getting into Berghain comes down fundamentally to a vibe. Sophie's identity was crafted through years of not eating enough by a distant, emotionally unavailable workaholic parent and an arts education filled with regret. Tonight, her vibe is enough. Sven nods and lets her pass. As Sophie enters, she hears the droning sound of a PC. She thinks to herself, am I in an ad? When making these videos, there are lots of times where I wish I could...
Ad.
It's a European company. It's secure. It has a 99...
Skip.
It's changed how I work. Try out AnyDesk at anydesk.com/hoove. When we speak of Berghain, we are mainly speaking about this section. There's also the Halle, which is a much larger chamber that's on the backside of the building.
But is that how you pronounce it? Halle. I thought you pronounce it how? Jesus Christ. It's pronounced Halle. Halle. Okay, fair play.
This area is more publicly accessible and does not have a cult following surrounding it. When we speak of Berghain, we're actually talking about four floors, each with separate clubs located here.
So good.
The most recently opened club is called Säule, located on the ground floor.
Yeah, that's a really cool one.
The Berghain dance floor is on the main floor. And then there's the Panorama Bar, located on the top floor.
My favorite room has to be Panorama Bar, and obviously the XXX. I hope they talk about the XXX room, but Pano is my favorite. The house, probably one of the best house rooms ever in the world. Has to be. Best programming, great vibe, you know, espresso martinis at the back there. There's a bartender in that in Pano bar. The bartender there is notoriously very hard to make smile, or he's a bit of a hard ass, but I love it. I love the unpredictability of like whether or not you're going to get him happy or sad or whatever, but I love it all. Pano bar is definitely my favorite place to go in.
Berghain is where they play techno music, which is open from Saturday evening until Monday.
The
Panorama
up.
Bar,
so
on the
cool.
other hand, is for lighter house music.
Yeah.
The last and fifth place is the male-exclusive Laboratory. It has a separate, more mysterious entrance at the side of the building, which goes to the basement of Berghain. In the main building, there are also dark rooms for play. But
hold on, so it's Laboratory XXX room. That's the one I went into during the club, during the Sylvester. It's the place where the DJ booth is like in a cage. It's suspended. It's like you have to walk up some stairs. It's in a cage at the top. And there's like platforms everywhere to stand on, really high ones. It's an amazing room. So I guess that's actually the Laboratory. Okay, I didn't know that. Fucking hell.
The Lab is the more exclusive and restricted location.
On one hand, you need niches and retreat spaces, humans, cave dwellers, like tight spaces. On the other hand, you need free movement areas that allow you to cruise smoothly, and rooms where guests can present themselves. Exactly.
Sometimes Berghain and the Lab are connected via Säule, and only men are admitted to the entire building. But the majority of times, it's separate.
The Betreiber wanted a club which they would not have to stress, neither with the building authorities nor the fire protection.
The interior was designed by Studio Carhartt, who had to navigate a fine line between maximizing freedom while minimizing chaos.
A club is like a kindergarten. You have to expect the unexpected.
In the Gitterrosten, die wir in Berghain verbaut haben, sind die Löcher entweder so
holes are either so small that you can't put your finger in them,
oder so groß,
or so big it doesn't get stuck. Ah, okay, smart.
Für die Böden,
smoothly ground asphalt for the floors,
der lässt sich fugenlos einbauen,
which can be installed seamlessly and is resistant.
Berghain has an ice cream bar, multiple normal ones, dark rooms, and large units.
That's the one place I've never been to. The one place I've never been to whilst I've been in there is the ice cream bar. I never actually ordered an ice cream. I think next time I go, I'm going to make a mission to go there because I've never been. I usually just, I mean, the room's gone up and down and in and out of the toilets, but I've never been in a fucking ice cream bar. I've never had the luxury or had the pleasure of eating an ice cream and having a break up there.
Unisex bathrooms. There's also sometimes an opening to a garden on the outside.
Yeah, the garden's really cool.
In
Berghain was raised the railings on the stairs. True. That already existed by several centimeters and rounded the handrails. That's a really good point. The handrails on the stairs, the side of them, they're oddly high. You basically can't see over the edge unless you like peer over. So I guess it's to stop people like getting too high and drunk and fucking falling over, because it's pretty, you know, substantial stairs. It's quite high up. But yeah, that's pretty cool. I miss a statue. Back in the day when I went, there used to be a statue. When you walked into the main room, there'd be this almost like floor to ceiling high statue of like a guy. It's like a Rome, I don't know what it was. It's like a statue. And it was fucking cool to come in and see that. It literally felt like it was in some fucking cyberpunk movie or something. It was fucking cool, but I don't know why they took it down.
Darauf abstellen kann. An den Geländern führen
Metallwände
bis zum
Boden,
zu verhindern, dass umgetreten Flaschen
runterrollen.
Die Bartresen sind nicht besonders kantig. Und in vielen Durchgängen haben wir Möglichkeiten geschaffen, sich bequem anzulehnen oder hinzusetzen.
For a club that is based on exclusivity and secrecy, it needs to be safe enough so that it can protect itself from having to be opened up to the outside.
Niemand sollte auf der Toilette
Nobody should collapse in the toilets and most found until Monday lunchtime. Yeah, by the way, they have one of the best toilets ever. All the toilets are fucking amazing. I think at the moment, they're trying to push that toilet downstairs on the main floor, on the ground floor. Next, on the way to go to the garden, there's a toilet there. They're trying to make that a Flinter-only toilet. So I guess that's like female, lesbian, intersex, trans, and well, I don't know what the A stands for. And they're trying to make that only like a toilet for that community of people. And I think there's now another petition to make a toilet that's only for shitting and pissing. Because a lot of people, you know, myself included, are in that toilet fucking, you know, bumping and pilling up until the heart's content. And sometimes, if you've been in there, especially with friends, you turn the toilets into a fucking little youth club. And you end up just chatting away and just, or whatever, or people are banging or whatever. But so if you're actually wanting to piss and shit, you're like waiting for ages, especially when it's really busy. So they're trying to, you know, figure out what toilet could be like the strict, you're only piss and shit here. No druggers, no hanky panky. But it's hard, isn't it? Because, you know, how are you going to police that? You know what I mean?
Der Stahltüren mit Gummi gefüllt.
Yeah, some steel doors filled with rubber because the people waiting outside are banging on them and their fists and finally get in. Ah, very smart. Well, there are already four people in the cubicle. Okay, the club should be functioning instinctively. That means that there are hardly any dead ends. You can find your way out every corner. That's a good point. There are very little dead ends. Every time you feel there's a dead end, there's another door or another way to go back around. You don't really feel like you hit a wall. Shit, all intentional. The toilet facilities are also designed so that you can walk in the circles around.
Berghain may be exclusive because it's good for marketing. It might have an air of secrecy so that more people try and get in. But at this point, it should be clear to you that what's inside is underwhelming to explain.
Exactly.
I can show you a floor plan, stainless steel bathroom, and a Stalinist facade.
Exactly.
But I can't make you smell the sweat, hear the droning sound of techno, or feel the comfort some find within its walls. Berghain was a fortress born from a time of authoritarian restriction. Today, its rules remain to protect a place beyond definition.
That's why I think it's important that people take Berghain as like an example, not because of just copying exactly what they do, but just the ethos around it, because I feel like it represents something that doesn't exist nowadays, where everybody thinks the most expensive, the most glitzy, the most crazy produced thing is always the best thing. At its core, it's just a rectangular concrete block. And it's just all the things they put in place to make it what it is, like the no photo policy, the really great booking and programming, the exclusivity of it, how people, you know, how it's basically, you know, founded from that, you know, the gay scene and shit. And it's meant to be a more of a safe haven for them. And it's obviously kind of been born out to be a little bit more overexpanded in that regard. All those things are why it's successful. It's not really about the building. It's not really about even the location. And I think you could easily take some of those, that DNA, that ethos, and sprinkle it into what you're doing. Because I think some clubs around the world fail in that they try and copy what Berghain doing and try and, you know, make it work where they are, which is obviously isn't going to work because Berghain also primarily works because it's in Berlin, because of, you know, their approach or how seriously they take fucking club music and dance music and nightlife and shit. All those things kind of lend to it being successful. But I think at its core, the fact that it's not glitzy, the fact that they don't have, you know, Wi-Fi in there, all this type of crazy shit, that's what people should be taking as like, okay, cool. It's possible to recreate this in my own way by taking the ethos of like, okay, let's make this club where it's more important about experiencing it while you're there. There's no recording, there's no video, no this and that. Everybody kind of collectively polices each other. There's no overbearing security on the dance floor. If anything, sometimes the security does go around and patrol, but you hardly feel them around. They don't flash flashlights around. They're not overbearing. They're almost kind of just like, you know, just carefully just make sure everyone's cool, everyone's good. The toilet kind of culture thing is amazing. No one gets super fucked up on the dance floor. You'd never see fights in there ever. All of that stuff can easily be recreated in other places. So I think that's an important part of it and why it should exist and why it does exist and why people should take lessons from it. But don't just, you know, don't apply it too literally, because unfortunately that place only works. That place only works in Berlin.
Channel.
Whoops.
Consider checking out
It wouldn't work in any other place, I think, in my opinion. But regardless, amazing video. Big up Hog, the channel. Great video. It's called What's Inside the World's Most Exclusive Club. Check it out. It's fucking amazing. I loved watching every minute of that video. Thank you for sharing, Hog. Anyway, my friends, that's been it. Episode number 765 of the Agostino Zinger Show. Thank you for tuning in. For those of you who are here watching me live, in about 15 minutes I'm going to do the random show. It won't be super long, but we'll do a little random show and catch up on what's been going on with all these fucking dumb comedians. But for those of you who are tuning in, listening to me live, thank you for tuning in. It's been a pleasure, never fucking a chore. As an outro, I'm going to be playing my tune of the day, which is going to be Vampire Weekend Connect from their recently released album. So definitely check it out if you haven't already. Vampire Weekend Connect is going to be my tune of the day. It's going to be playing for you right now, for those of you who are watching this show live. And then, of course, I'm going to be editing this into the show later on. But for those of you watching live, my tune today is Vampire Weekend called Connect. Thank you for tuning into the show. It's been a pleasure to have your company. company. I really did enjoy it. If you're watching the show live for the first time, please make sure you like the stream down below. If you're listening to it via the audio podcast, please make sure you give me a 5-star review. That'd be greatly appreciated. And thank you once again for tuning in. Thank you once again for tuning in. Peace out, my friends.
The memories don't fade, surprise and fade for days. You're elegantly wasted before you lost your spark. Took acid in the park while living in a basement. Is it strange I can't connect? It isn't strange, but I could check. Walked around to where we kept the box of wax. Lately, I know what it's lost, it's never found. Down. I read the parking rules as Amsterdam unspooled and trucks sped on the fedrin. The things we used to see, the sandhogs in the street, the chickens in her bedroom. Is it strange I can't connect? It isn't strange, but I could check. Walked around to where we met the first time, overwhelmed, and I know what it's lost, it's never found. Down.